He was semi-stiff and losing his erection. Something was wrong. Something was missing. He didn't know what.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 118 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And lots of good stuff coming up on the show today.
To kick things off, our topic this time around is our top three biopics. And I think that's probably one of the biggest ones we've done yet, with so much to choose from.
Yeah, I'm amazed it's taken this long for us to get to it, really.
I thought we had done it. I had to go back on the website and double check. But luckily, it's fresh, it's new. I can't wait.
And our main review is going to be a reboot of Hellboy. It was firstly seen about 10 years ago, along with a sequel, and now we are treated with a brand new movie. But what do we think? Stick around.
And we will also be re-watching The Rules of Attraction, a small film that I think a lot of people don't really know about or haven't seen, so I'm looking forward to discussing that with you guys later on.
We're also bringing you round two of our brand new quiz, Flick Me Faster.
Jesus.
Yes, that'll be interesting.
And to segue seamlessly, our movie masturbate is going to be the one, the only, David Fincher.
He directs a film a week.
What do you do?
I'm looking forward to that one. The hardest one yet, that's the truth.
I agree.
Know I keep saying it, but for me it is the hardest one yet.
And again, it was very, very popular on social media, which we'll discuss when we get there. And of course, we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week, give away just an insane amount of prizes, and just basic bullshit.
Yeah. Skip to the end, bringing you basic bullshit every 2 weeks.
Bringing you basic bullshit since 2014.
You know what, guys, right? You know Gemma just recently came back from holiday.
Uh-huh.
She went all the way over to the Big Apple.
Yeah.
And brought us fuck all.
Shame.
I'm selfish. You got to remember this about me. I'll never change.
So this week I've had a week off and I went to Pembrokeshire just for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. Only just down in South Wales. Did I bring you something back? Yes, I did.
Suck up.
Ooh.
Here's some rock from Tenby.
Cheers.
Look at that, Tenby South Wales rock.
Oh, there's a picture of it as well, just in case we didn't know. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So if you go to America next time, bring us something decent. Because look at that, nothing beats good old-fashioned rock.
I could do, but I've got to get past that stubborn selfishness of mine.
You've got to. Ben doesn't look very thrilled.
No, that's why I don't bring back things.
It's because you're actively hating your own teeth by it inside. You're saying, fuck my teeth.
We're doing a lot of fucks already, and we did reduce them last time round.
That's true.
Did you count them?
No, I didn't. Oh. Can't be bothered this time. And speaking of you going to Pembrokeshire, didn't you run into a listener when you were just walking around?
Randomly, I was walking along, and I heard, Mark Woodchat, and I was like, what? Turned round, and there's this guy going, you're from Skip to the End. I was like, oh, yes, I am.
Oh, you got
that. No, it wasn't that bad, but it was a friend of ours called Jeff who listens to us, loves the podcast, and was like, I recognise you, and he's got a podcast himself. And yeah, it was just a bit random. Like, he was from Nottingham as well.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Bit random, but it felt quite good for 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mark wants more.
Yeah, it's definitely good.
We are superstars.
That's it.
Let's get started.
So to kick things off, our topic this time round is our top three biopics. It's quite self-explanatory, really.
Yep.
Yeah,
biopic. You know what a biopic is by now.
Yeah.
So Ben, fire away, give me your first.
I'm going with the 2004 film Derunter Gang, or as it's known in English, Downfall.
Never seen this one.
Have you seen it, Gemma?
A long, long time ago. It's old Hitler, isn't it?
It's old Hitler, yeah.
Good old boss.
That's that old fella. It's a German film about the last days of Hitler, set during the Battle of Berlin and culminating with Hitler's death in April 1945. And the film is based in large part on the memoirs of Traudl Junger, who was Hitler's private secretary, and as well as those of Albert Speer, who was one of Hitler's highest ranking officials to survive the war. It's first-hand accounts, which really adds a lot of authenticity to the film, adds a lot of historical truth to proceedings, and it takes a work of damn near genius to humanise Hitler. But the performance of Bruno Ganz as Hitler does that. We know Hitler was evil. We know he was a bloody horrible chap.
Oh, he's a bad, bad boy.
He was a bad egg. He was a bad egg, Hitler. I don't care who knows it. I didn't like him. I'll stand by that.
On record.
Yeah.
But it'd be very, very easy to portray him as a two-dimensional monster. But Gans digs beneath the surface to get to the essence of the man. And that's why it was a very controversial film and a controversial performance, because people don't like the idea of Hitler being humanised and seeing him have recognisable human emotions. It's much more satisfying and comforting for us just to think of him as a monster. It's easier for us to do that rather than try and make him seem like a real person with real emotions. The key thing, though, is there's a difference between humanising him, which the film does, and making him sympathetic, which it absolutely does not. That would be a touch too far. But it's an absolutely astonishing and blistering and fierce performance by Gantz. There are scenes of him getting angry at the failure of his commanders to follow his orders, where he seems like he's on the verge of an aneurysm. He's getting so angry and worked up. It's like his rage might make his head explode right there. It's just an extraordinary performance. And it's a beautifully directed film as well. It's stark and bold and unvarnished. It was a unsurprisingly and deserved nominee for the Best Foreign Film Oscar. It didn't win, sadly, but it earned its nomination. And it's utterly unflinching as well. There's a scene, for example, where Goebbels' wife, she gives cyanide pills to her children because she'd rather kill them herself than allow them to be killed by the Allies or surrender.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, I mean, this is some dark, dark, bleak shit.
Welcome to Skip to the End, yeah. Bringing you fun from the first 5 minutes. Jesus Christ.
But it's an astounding film.
I've seen the cover quite a lot in, like, HMV. It's always, like, one of these highly recommended world cinema titles on the end, you know, all these ones.
Yeah.
I've just never got around to seeing it, and now I should.
Yeah.
I think it's more famous for when Hitler does have his kind of, you know, angry moment when he's telling the rest of the army lads off. It's been made into many memes and a lot of piss takes from talk shows and comedy sketches.
Yeah.
But it's iconic.
There.
And nobody can change my mind.
I love that you don't like him.
Oh, I'm dead against him, Mark.
Yeah.
We do not endorse the actions of Adolf Hitler.
We are not fans.
Come on, Gemma, bring it up a bit, please.
Okie dokie. As far back as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a gangster.
Nice.
Good fellas.
Beautiful.
I purposely didn't pick this because I've talked about this film so many goddamn times, I left it off my list.
That's all right, but I've never really spoken about it before. So it's my turn, and it depicts the story of gangster Henry Hill, which is played magnificently by Ray Liotta, and of course directed by Martin Scorsese. One of our favourites, guys.
Definitely.
So it showcases his early beginnings in the mob, his relationship with his wife Karen, and of course the associates Jimmy Conway and Tommy DeVito. And it's not just an important staple in the career of Martin Scorsese, but I think it's one of the most interesting portrayals of a life story in film history. But that's just my opinion. But there are so many moments that we can talk about, and you can start from the introductions of all of his gangster mates. You can talk about DeVito's terrifying turn when he tells him, oh, so do you think I'm funny then?
Uh-huh.
And just the whole atmosphere of that scene switches from just having a laugh with one of your mates to possibly getting stabbed in the eye. It's absolutely terrifying stuff. And of course, the downward spiral that Henry Hill gets when he starts getting addicted to the old cocaine and starts believing that helicopters are following him, to the soundtrack of Jump Into the Fire, which is amazing. But it showcases the crazy and dangerous world that Hill decided to be a part of. At the beginning, he's quite innocent. He's only getting into scrapes and this and that. But by the end of it, he is in so deep that the only way to get out is by ratting on his mates and getting into witness protection. The soundtrack scores this film so perfectly, because at the start you've got the smooth serenades of Bobby Darin, you've got Tony Bennett, but as it starts getting real shit, you've got Rolling Stones and The Who kind of soundtracking the descent into this all. It's a dramatisation of the story. We know that some of this stuff didn't really happen. We know that Joe Pesci wasn't, in fact, the depiction of what DeVito was. In fact, in real life, Tommy DeVito was a big hulking guy, quite stocky, but still an absolute giant. But it doesn't matter, because this whole film, 2.5 hours of it, is perfection from start to finish. I think it is one of the greatest ways of telling a batshit life onto the screen, and it should be talked about from years and years to come. I think we should do this as a rewatch.
It's absolutely astounding that Scorsese didn't win the Best Director Oscar for this.
Massively.
It's his masterpiece, I would say. It's a phenomenal film. And one of the things you touched on there is, It shows that the mafia life isn't something you can pick and choose. It's not like a job where you can choose to quit. When you're in it for life, no matter how dark and fucked up it gets. Mm-hmm. And the only way out is either in a coffin or in witness protection.
What about the part when it starts falling at the seams and one by one they get killed off in the most horrendous of ways? Mm-hmm. Just disturbing stuff.
I've only seen this film once.
Please watch it again.
Yes, but do you know why? Because I want it to be a rewatch, and I can't believe we're at 118 and we've never picked it. And I was waiting then for Ben to say, we have done it. It was done on episode 46 and I completely forgot. Yeah. But I'm waiting because I want it to be refreshed when we all do it again together. And I can't wait because... The you know what, it needs to be done.
Everything is perfect. The way how the camera pans, the way how the use of light, the score, the soundtrack, the acting, everything is just perfection.
You like it?
It's all right, you know, I suppose it's okay.
Well, I don't know why, but when you were talking about the soundtrack, I don't know why, I thought you were going to say Bobby Davro. I had this because you were talking, you went Bobby Davro, for some reason I thought, what's he up to now?
I would pay... good cash money to hear Bobby Davro sing Beyond the Sea.
I would love
in
that.
In the voice of Mavis from Coronation Street.
Whatever happened to Bobby Davro?
He'll be in Panto.
Yes.
Go to Blackpool around Christmas time and you'll find him.
Now you know the real reason why I went away last
there
week.
We go.
He was as good as ever. Him and Les Dennis, a duet made forever.
Dream team.
Yeah. Christ. I don't know how we got into Bobby Davro, but fuck it.
I don't want to get into Bobby
Davro. Too many fucks, isn't there? There's already, I think we're on four. Right. My choice is quite a recent title, I, Tonya.
Oh.
Great pick.
A great, great film. And one of my favourites for the last couple of years. I think a lot of people don't give Margot Robbie enough credit because of that DC film that she was featured in that wasn't very good, The Suicide Squad. But we have to recognise her for great films like
The Wolf of Wall Street.
So that's a long title. That's a lot of work to think. But I, Tonya's the one that stole it for me. And for me, it's probably the performance of 2017. I thought she was absolutely captivating. Or 2018 if you're in the UK, whenever it was, IMDb. But she portrays, obviously, Tonya Harding, who's one of the ice skaters and one of the best in the world. And the thing I like about this film is I didn't know any of the background story.
Yeah.
I wasn't really into it. And then seeing the film, I then went on YouTube and checked out loads of footage. And she's bloody good. Her representation, the realism of her being this character, I was actually like, fuck, she's studied... I'm swearing already. I've got to try and stop swearing here. I thought she was very good indeed from start to finish.
Very good indeed.
And it made me realise just how much of a great actress she is. So now that she's been cast in the next Tarantino film, I think she's going to steal the show, even though she's against the big heavyweights. The moment that we see her ex-husband ruining her life and the whole leg-bashing incident that led her to being banned, I thought was absolutely awesome because we see this... girl that doesn't even look like she wants to be there because she has this horrible mother that's abusive and has pushed her all her life. And Alison Janney is, for me, up there as one of the best actresses in the world.
Definitely.
And I'm so glad she got the recognition because it's not just about Margot Robbie. Those two together in this film, my God, absolutely flawless. Ben, you talked about this film recently, didn't you? I think it was it just like one of your films of the year or something?
Yeah, quite possibly. I talk about it as often as I can, really, because I genuinely love it, and it was a surprise. I didn't expect it to be half as good as it turned out to be.
No. Mm-hmm. There's that whole scene in the mirror.
Oh, God.
The breakdown.
I think it's a real sort of testament to an actor when they can portray a scene without saying a single word. And you saw the pain etched in her face. You saw the sadness in her eyes. But this forced painted smile, literal paint on her face to try and hide just the devastation that she's experiencing was first class.
And I think it allowed a lot of people to realise that she's not just a pretty face.
Yeah.
She's an incredibly pretty face.
Yeah.
But she's also a very, very talented actress.
Mm-hmm. Like Dolly Parton, some just say she's a big pair of tits.
Exactly the same.
Exactly that.
Wow.
But I liked it at the end as well when we got the credits and we saw the real footage of her, which we get in quite a lot of biopics, but it was actually very accurate. And I was like, yeah. She deserves more, and hopefully she won't just do a lot of crap, because I'm worried that she's now doing her own film of the whole character from Batman, Miss Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see that.
I don't know.
I do.
I think it'll have some weight to it.
Yeah. Nah, it's DC. It's going to be whacked.
Speaking of which, have we all seen Shazam now?
Yes.
I haven't.
Are you still not seen
it? No.
Yeah, I went to see it. It was all right.
I thought it was bloody good fun.
Didn't blow me away. I thought the ending was a bit rushed, a bit messy. And and like all DC films, it's just humans hitting CGI monsters at the finale, like every single DC film is these days. But it was a good bit of fun.
I loved Zachary Levi.
Yeah, he was great.
He's charming.
I like him.
I think someone said it was like Big, so I will go
and
see
it. It's a superhero book.
I'm pretty there. There you go. Take my money. Right, let's go around again. Ben?
I'm going with a film that I'd be very surprised if either of you have seen, but if you have, more power to you.
Okay.
It's a film from 2003 called American Splendor.
Yes, I had Paul Giamatti.
It is Paul Giamatti, yes.
No.
You've not seen it, Mark. So it's a comedy drama about the life of a chap called Harvey Pekar, who was an American underground comic book writer. He found fame in the 70s and 80s for creating an autobiographical comic looking at his life and his relationships and his anxieties. And the film, as Gemma's just said, stars the absolutely magnificent Paul Giamatti as Pekar. And it was right in that period when Giamatti was just starting trying to make a name for himself. This film came out the year before Sideways, which, as we know, is his big major breakthrough. And Picard is this neurotic, downtrodden, short-tempered grump of a man. And nobody could have played him as well as Giamatti does here. And I would say that Giamatti is the only actor who can give William H. Macy a run for his money at playing emasculated sad sacks.
Yes.
I think they're the two best in the world at those kind of roles.
It's like the droopy dog eyes.
Yeah, he's perfect in those kind of things, and he's spot on for Harvey Picar. And the weird thing about this film, what makes it so arresting, is that the real Harvey Picar also appears as himself at various points during the film in interview segments, and he also does the voiceover for the film. So it's a weird hybrid of documentary and narrative feature, and there's also parts where Giamatti as Picard interacts with the real Picard. So it's unlike any kind of biopic or any film I've ever seen before. It also pays homage to the comic book roots as well by sometimes having thought bubbles appear, so you see what Harvey's thinking in this bubble, or sometimes the frame that's on screen will dissolve into one of the comic book frames.
Oh, nice.
It's a really beautifully directed film. It was directed by a couple of documentarians. I don't think they'd done a narrative feature before. And it's a fascinating film, and just it's a great story and a brilliant performance by Paul Giamatti.
I really do think you'll like this one, Mark.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. It's just it's a testament to his character. He's a great actor, and I think this is probably one of his underrated roles. I don't think a lot of people, as Ben said in his introduction, I don't think a lot of people have seen it, but once they do, they'll be regretting why it's taken them this long to watch it.
Does it top Rhino in Amazing Spider-Man Part 2?
It's number two. Yeah. Rhino is obviously his best role.
You've opened up a big debate there.
You know what I mean? That is a... What's it called again?
American Splendor.
American Splendor.
Yeah, and the thing is, because Harvey Picar is an American underground comic book writer, he's not even that big of a name in America. Underground comics, by their very nature, are small things. So he's barely known at all in England. So, you know, it had a very, very brief release. Not a lot of people have seen it, but it's definitely worth seeking out.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Another for the list.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. My second choice is a music biopic, and it's Control, released in 2007.
Ooh, nice.
So it's about the profile of Ian Curtis, who is the lead singer of Joy Division, who sadly passed away at the age of 23. Now, the whole film is shot in black and white, which immediately gives that feel of watching a historical event, knowing that this was late 70s, early 80s. But it captures the mood wonderfully, even the whole mood of that kind of downtrodden life in Macclesfield. Sam Riley stars as Ian Curtis, and what blows me away about his performance is he really did study the way how he sang, the way how he moved, the way how he danced. It's as if the spirit of Ian Curtis embodies him at times. And that goes for the rest of the band that are actually playing along with him. When you watch the performances live, you think that there's a backing track involved. You think that they've just got one of the old performances on a video, or they're just lip syncing to a track. All of them actively learned to play the instrument that they were assigned to, and they played for real. And it's incredible listening to it, because even Riley's vocals had that sort of low, kind of bassy kind of feel that Ian Curtis was well known for. And we see the descent into depression, and of course, because he was diagnosed with epilepsy, it makes the film's conclusion even more heartbreaking and heart-wrenching. We know, sadly, Curtis took his own life. But the whole film is a wonderful reason as to why Joy Division were so important back in the day. They were very atmospheric, very moody music, but I remember personally listening to a transmission for the first time, and it was the song that got me into the band, and it was unlike anything that I had ever heard before, because I grew up with R&B, boy bands, hip-hop, and then Transmission just thundered into my speakers, and after discovering that they only did two albums, two bloody albums, and I'm such a massive fan, and Sam Riley as Ian Curtis is just mind-blowingly talentedly good.
He is excellent. Samantha Morton's brilliant as well.
Deborah, yes. Deborah,
yeah, she's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I've not seen it.
Really?
I know.
Well, if you do want to see it, it's on Amazon Prime at the moment.
I'm liking Amazon Prime. There's a lot more added to it recently. Mm-hmm. It used to be a bit shite, but now I'm getting a obviously now Lost is on there, which I want to rewatch. The Office.
And The Office, of course.
It's well worth your £8 a month, whatever it is.
Always.
But yeah, as a band, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe they've only got two albums. Yeah. It's just not enough.
I've forgotten he was that young. Was it 23, you say, when he died?
Jesus. He got married just after school and then had a kid. But it all became too much too young, I think, and it's just gutting the fact that we never really got to see the development of what Joy Division could have been and what they could have done for the rest of the world, because at the peak of their career, that's when it kind of ended, sadly. But they also had this wonderful relationship with Tony Wilson, he of 24-Hour Party People.
Oh, nice.
It was quite nice seeing him crop up in the film and watching him sign the contract in his own blood, which genuinely happened.
Yeah.
That's dedication. We should have done that when you joined full time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really show your commitment.
Yeah, that's
forget
right.
Just bringing ciders. We want your blood.
I know. And a call for 999, if that's
yes,
okay.
Yes, that sounds good.
And I suppose if you want to know what Joy Division would sound like now if they had continued, just buy any Editors album. Because yeah. They've just stolen their sound wholesale.
The vocals, the lyrics, the everything.
Yeah.
Nice. My next choice is Man on the Moon.
Oh, lovely.
The Life of Andy Kaufman. And until I'd seen this film, I only thought Jim Carrey could ever do the same sort of character, wacky comedy. I've never, ever seen him do anything like this. But in the same breath, I've never seen him be as good as this. You know, this and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where I think he's never been better, because he's always been that comedy actor, like a bit like Adam Sandler, you know, until he did Punch Drunk Love, all he did was the same sort of character. But you've never seen a performance like this. It's very strange, it's very odd. The character he plays has this weird sense of humor that is socially inept. You know, you see him walking around and he's never ever looks people in the eye. He's like no one else. And I don't know much about the original Kaufman. I don't know much about him, but I've seen some of the footage on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then only recently I watched Jim and Andy, which is a documentary all about the making of it. And this was the bit where I really thought, Jim Carrey is insane. Have you seen this documentary at all?
I've not.
No, not
right.
yet.
So it shows him backstage with all the cast and how it is. And he didn't just, you know, take on the role. He became the role all day, every day. And it got to the point where he was winding up the cast. You see people like Danny DeVito on set, like, can you just fuck off? You're really doing my head in now. But he got obsessed. He got into the mind. He was watching footage of it 24 hours a day. He locked himself in hotels, like you read about with the Joker performance, like you do with Daniel Day-Lewis. He got over the top. And I think the representation now, I've seen it on video and I've seen the DVD and I've seen the documentary. I think he absolutely stole the show. I think it's a great film. And it even made an R.E.M. song decent. So if you can do that for me, then that's an achievement.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great film. And he's never been like it since, has he? He's now, I don't know what he's doing now,
well,
actually.
I can tell you what he's doing. He's just in a TV show called Kidding. And
Kidding.
It's about a TV kind of show character. And he pretty much has a midlife crisis and a bit of a meltdown. I've just added it onto my list of TV shows to watch. It's currently streaming on Now TV.
Oh.
But it's got some pretty good reviews.
Yeah, it's meant to be quite good. Didn't I wasn't interested in it. It doesn't look like my cup of tea.
Really?
He's gone a bit loopy, hasn't he? He went off and started off it, like abusing people allegedly.
I think he internalised the character of Andy Kaufman too much and then started being a Kaufman-esque character in real life.
Oh, dear.
Wacky stunts and all that kind of thing. I think he identifies with Kaufman too much, to an unhealthy degree.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
It ruined him.
Shame.
Whoops.
Oh well. But it's a good film and I enjoyed the film and, you know, I want to watch it again because I haven't seen it for a long time, but it was one of those ones where I just watched it and I was blown away.
I love that Jerry the King Lawler plays himself
to
recreate that scene of those two having a fight. Was it on Letterman or something
that
like
was
that?
It, yeah,
fight?
Amazing.
Yeah. Great stuff.
So Ben, final one.
My final pick is 2002's Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, great film.
So it's Steven Spielberg's true story of the brazen and flamboyant conman Frank Abagnale Jr., played by Leonardo DiCaprio, and the dogged FBI agent who hunts him down, played by Tom Hanks. Now, this was the film that turned me around on DiCaprio, Hanks, and Spielberg.
That's hell of an achievement.
I know, right? So prior to this, Spielberg, to me, just made tacky kids' films. Bearing in mind I hadn't seen Jaws at that point.
I was just about to flip the table there.
So he just made tacky, crappy 80s kids' films to me, and I couldn't stand
him.
He's
doing this to annoy me.
And to me, DiCaprio was just an annoying pretty boy.
Yeah.
He was just that guy from things like The Basketball Diaries that I just had no interest in whatsoever.
That's fair.
And then Hanks was Forrest fucking Gump.
Your favourite!
So I had no interest in any of the three of them. But I loved this film so much that it made me totally revise my opinion on all of them. So DiCaprio is now, of course, my favourite actor in the world. I think he's the best of all time. It made me start to like Hanks again, because I did used to like Hanks. I used to love him for films like Big and The Burbs and Joe versus the Volcano, of course.
Oh, yeah.
A masterpiece.
That classic. Yeah. And it forced me to pay more attention to Steven Spielberg's more adult fare, so films like Save It, Private Ryan, Munich, and of course Jaws. So, you know, it turned me around on all three of those guys. But it's one of those stories that just seems too crazy to be true.
Yeah.
But it is true. It's extraordinary. Abagnale, when he was still in his teens, had managed to con several million dollars by successfully posing as a doctor, a lawyer, and an airline pilot. While still in his teens.
It's mental. Absolutely raving insane.
He was so brazen and so confident that it needed an actor who could portray all of that. And of course, DiCaprio's your man. Someone with the acting chops and the charm to convince anyone that he could be anyone that he wanted to be. DiCaprio, spot on for it. The film also stars a very, very young Amy Adams.
Oh, she's so adorable with her braces.
It's one of her first film roles as a woman that Frank comes across and cons and eventually falls in love with, but then abandons because that's kind of what he does. It's a brilliant cat and mouse movie, and the chemistry between DiCaprio and Hanks is superb, to the point where I'd love to see those two work together again.
Yeah. Maybe Big Two. or Burbs Two. Yeah, they'll get Corey back then.
Or they could do something completely different.
An original.
Not an unnecessary sequel.
Just wind Ben up into a prequel to Forrest Gump. And Leonardo DiCaprio's playing the young Forrest.
Oh, good God, no.
Never going to happen.
I don't think so.
But it's such a great, fun film. It's not particularly... There's not a lot of weight to it. It's quite a light, frothy, throwaway film, but it's so much goddamn fun, isn't it?
It's a film, whenever it's on the TV, doesn't matter what point it's on, I'll sit down and I'll watch the rest of it. It's that kind of movie.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. It's one of them where you'll just be going through the channels and it'll be on BBC Two.
Always.
At like 11 o'clock at night. Oh, yeah!
I went to the cinema to see it with my mum and dad.
Oh, yeah.
Great film, but you don't realise how long it is. Mm. It's it's nearly 3 hours long, I think. It's a bloody long one.
In comparison to Men at Work, what are we talking about?
It's good point. But it's a great film, and like DiCaprio, as much as he's hateable in it, I love him. He's quite charming.
Oh,
and he's
just, you know what?
He's walking with all the stewardesses, and he's got those glasses and everything. I'm like, you're just a star.
Yeah,
you've got it all.
Mm-hmm. I would be one of those stewardesses hanging off his arm.
You'd be hanging off his knob.
That was graphic.
Like a trapeze artist.
Well, what an achievement for those three to turn Ben round. You know what I mean? Wow. That's good going.
It's a gift.
I know. I'm trying to think what we could do for James Corden to turn you around. That'd be a tough
Moving
one.
On swiftly. Let me save this segment. So my last choice. You know what? I love this film and I don't care what anyone says. Ed Wood from 1994.
Oh, nice.
Now, we do have a problem with Johnny Depp and we have a problem with Tim Burton because they're just not good anymore. But this film is their peak. This is the epitome of when Depp and Burton come together, giggity, and they make some magic. So the film is about the lifetimes and career of the man that was dubbed the worst director in the world of all time, Edward D. Wood Jr. And he specialised in low-budget B sci-fi movies. And somehow, despite all the knockbacks and all the negativity and the crap that he faced during these times, he still managed to look on the bright side. And Depp plays him with just such wondrous charm and wide-eyedness that he doesn't care. He's gonna make the best goddamn film with the best goddamn people. And it's a real nostalgic kind of feel to it because, again, shot in black and white, but it has a B-movie feel to it, which I really love. Even the mates that he knocks around with, you know, he knocks around with a wrestler, a lady who dresses as a vampire. Mm. Somebody, you know, it's the people, the freaks of the underbelly of Hollywood, and yet he manages to find a family within them all. And it's shown that, you know, despite all of this, he can get a break, and if he believes in himself, that doesn't matter. Because he's got these great band of friends, including Bela Lugosi, the world-famous Bela Lugosi, by trying to get him to overcome his drug addiction. But if you've not seen this film, give it a chance, because we know Johnny Depp is renowned for making utter shit these days.
Yeah.
And we know that Burton has pretty much killed his career by wasting his time making a film about a baby elephant that nobody really asked for.
No.
But please watch this because it's just a camp and kitschy kind of fun film, and it recaptures that magic that we used to love about these two individuals. Edward.
It's upsetting though, because when you see a film like that or Edward Scissorhands and you're thinking these are two very talented people at the peak of their powers, and look what they've become.
I just can't believe my own eyes. I have to wash them with soap.
I don't even know what Johnny Depp's doing now. Honestly, I think he's just doing adverts for aftershave. I've not seen him on the big screen for a long time. And everyone's like, oh, it's his comeback. Watch this one. It's always toss.
May I remind you, do you remember when we went to see Murder on the Orient Express?
Yes, I forgot about that.
Yep, he was in it for what, 5-10 minutes? And he looked like he couldn't even be bothered to do a thing about it.
Yeah.
Didn't look like he bothered learning the lines. He looked bored as hell. Yeah, we didn't score it highly, if I remember.
No, I was reading an interview the other day. It's an old interview from many, many years ago with Jack Nicholson, and he was talking about making Batman with Tim Burton. He was talking about how Burton's one of his favourite directors to work for because no other director seems as though they're having as much fun as Burton. It's not just a job to him, it's his passion, it's his art, it's his craft, and he loves being there, he loves doing the job. And I think, I was thinking, that's a beautiful thing, that's lovely, but he wants to probably think less about the fun and try and do some actually good work.
Stop mucking around.
Don't muck about.
They muck about.
They do.
Yes, it's a shame, yeah, because like you said, early films he's done, he gave us Beetlejuice.
I know.
Yeah.
Batman was incredible.
Mm-hmm. And now he gives us Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka.
And Dumbo.
Alice in Wonderland.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
I just want him to just retire.
I thought you were going to...
No, I don't want that. I'll save the day. My final pick is The Disaster Artist.
Oh, Jesus.
Based on Tommy Wiseau.
Come on!
Does it count?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, it does.
The making of the greatest film of all time.
True.
The
True.
Room.
Christ.
James Franco, for me, gives us a performance of a lifetime. You're talking about Leonardo DiCaprio. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. James, the God himself, Franco, who's not in the light at the moment for
nope.
different reasons. Uh-huh. But when he gave us this film, we all probably thought this isn't going to work. This is going to be ridiculous. And it's not just because of my obsession with The Room since we did the rewatch.
It is.
And I've interviewed the cast.
A little bit.
My life. But it did work. It was a very good portrayal of the man himself who is... No one knows where he's from. No one knows his age. You've talked about vampires on his podcast. He probably is a vampire. Yeah. But somehow Franco got this eye slightly closed, got this pale face, this long black hair, his arse out. And for some reason, it worked. And it really did, didn't it? It shouldn't have. His brother playing the role of Mark was brilliant. Absolutely outstanding. It was stupid. He got his mates on board like Seth Rogen, as always. But it worked. I found it funny. I found it charming. And it was just silly.
Yeah,
but it worked. And if anything good could come from this, it brought The Room to people's attention. Probably too much that the fact that now Wisey thinks he's actually genuinely a superstar.
Yes.
And he isn't.
He needs
and
to go away now.
He's doing stuff like films about, is it Shark that's coming out?
God.
Oh, hi Shark.
No,
it's annoying. But for that moment that came out, for us three to go to the cinema, it was one of the best days of my life because we all did love it and we just had a blast, didn't we?
Yeah.
The great surprise of that film is when they were making it, our assumption was, you know, it'll be a good sort of low budget comedy film that fans of The Room will enjoy. We never expected it to be any more than that. We certainly didn't expect it to become an Oscar nominee, a critical darling and an Oscar nominee. That's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
But fully deserved because it's a great fucking film.
Yeah. Was it screenplay it got, didn't
it?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But how much were we rewarded right at the end when you had the original and the guys that played in The Disaster Artist recreating some of the most important scenes in The Room? It just... Oh, it's marvellous.
It's really good to rewatch as well because you can buy it with the commentary from Tommy, and he's doing it there with James and listening to them two arguing on set about stuff. You know that Franco took him under his wing and was putting up with him a lot. Even so much he put him in the film for about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He must have been an absolute nightmare to work with.
Yeah.
I've read about documentaries made on him, and he puts his stamp on everything. He has to have full creative control. I can imagine him being an absolute pain. Wasn't it at the Golden Globes or something? He grabbed the mic.
Yeah.
He was about to.
Yeah.
He's a liability.
He is.
But he got the results, and fair play. It was a well-directed film as well from Franco.
Yeah, very, very much so.
I love the fact that you managed to shoehorn something about The Room in the topic.
Yeah.
Well
done.
5 house points.
Thank you very much. There's no documentary on like Blade Runner here, so we can just a biopic or anything yet.
Or something Jaws-esque.
So this is, let me get this right, this is no crossover today.
That is a surprise, isn't it?
I think we deserve a drink
for
that. Well done, guys.
Chin.
Here we go. So some more brothers.
Oh, that's refreshing.
I love it.
Thanking you.
So, talking about thanking you, what about the old social media? Have they come up with anything good this time around?
You know what, Mark? They've only done it. We're going to go to Twitter first. So, Shailene at I Love to Bake Cake. I'll be getting in touch with you later. She's gone for The Blind Side.
Ooh, that's a terrible film. It is.
Yeah.
Also, Walk the Line.
Good film.
That's a great... I thought one of you guys might have that.
How about this for redemption? Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Robert Iathrop at WildTurkey941 said Lincoln.
Yes.
Quite a recent one.
Yeah.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
And Sid and Nancy.
Very good.
Ooh, classic.
That nearly made my top three.
Yeah.
So good. Jonathan Zemsky at Jay Zemsky said Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
That's a great film.
I like that.
Agreed with Ben, American Splendor.
Hey.
Yay.
There is love out there. And The Elephant Man.
Ooh.
Very Lynchian. I love the fact that I got a symphony of oohs then.
Anthony Hopkins in that as well. Brilliant.
Yeah. Then we're going to go over to Facebook. So we've got Damien Bullock said
hey.
La Bamba.
Yes, I've not seen that in years.
What's that?
About the story of Richie Valens, isn't it, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
No, yeah, that one. He also said, Fighting With My Family.
Yeah, it's a damn good film.
Yeah. It's a fine film, and Straight Out of Compton.
Yeah, another great film.
Not as good as Snake Out of Compton,
true,
but it's up there.
The Superior. Ashley Northey said, Without Limits.
Don't know it.
No, me neither, but they did say Tombstone.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. great film.
And The Untouchables.
Oh, amazing.
Mm-hmm. Then we got Stu Reed. Stu Reed said, A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, I don't like
that
film, really.
Years.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Donnie Brasco.
Great
that
film.
That is a heavy
That's
hitter.
When Johnny Depp was good.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah, ooh, good film.
I miss ooh. Robin Williams.
I know. And then over to Instagram, we've got Tiffin Landscape Construction, at Tiffin Landscape Construction. That's Tiffin
yeah.
Landscape Construction.
What about a plug?
I know. They said The Aviator.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Goodfellas.
Again, yeah.
And Bohemian Rhapsody.
Fuck
Ben's
you.
Favourite
he's
film.
Put, he's God, put on a side a side note. He said, come at me, Ben. So thank you very much, guys. And as always, keep them coming in.
Whose topic choice is it next?
Me, me, me. Oh, guys. In the past, we've talked about foreign films.
Yep.
But there is a continent of the world that I would love us to wax lyrical about. So on the next episode, we're going to be talking about our top three Asian films.
Ooh. Amazing.
We've been to see Hellboy, directed by Neil Marshall and starring David Harbour, Mila Jovovich and Ian McShane. In the Dark Ages, a blood witch named Nimue, who is ready to obliterate humanity, is betrayed by her coven and dismembered by King Arthur and Merlin to prevent further mayhem. Fast forward to the present time and a hog-like creature decides to piece her back together to help fulfil what she never got to finish. It's now up to Hellboy and the Bureau for Paranormal Research to stop her plan and save the world from cannibalistic giants and all manners of satanic monsters. Now, before we go in, we are going to be spoiling the movie a lot. So if you've yet to see the film but you want to watch it, please skip to the end of this segment and we'll be here. We'll be waiting to see what you think. But in the meantime, if you have watched the film and you want to hear our opinion, here it is. So, Ben, Hellboy or Hell No Boy?
Hell No Boy. What a fucking mess. What? What a total and utter shambles this film was. I love the Guillermo del Toro Hellboy films, right? And I know there are a lot of del Toro fanboys who were reflexively geared to hate this film, whether it was good or not. I'm not one of them. I genuinely wanted it to be good because I love the character. I really wanted to like it, but it was complete and utter shite.
So that's what Ben thinks. Mark?
As it stands right now, this is my film of the year. If it was the only film I had seen,
yeah.
And I was a moron. It's not funny, it's not clever enough to be self-aware, it's weak, it's unfocused, it's a goddamn mess. Probably the biggest pile of shit I've seen in probably 12 months.
Yeah.
I can't say anything else. It's absolutely shite.
This film should be dismembered and scattered all across the world, locked up in chests, and never to be opened again. If you ever want to know what creative differences looks like, Exhibit A. Because Perlman and Guillermo del Toro walked away from the pitch of Hellboy 3 because of this reason. And guys, they had every right to. This is an abomination.
Yeah.
It's dull. It's like a loud, obnoxious music video. And my God, nothing worked.
Yeah. Should we score it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you know at this point, Neil Marshall didn't turn up to the premiere?
Really?
Shocking.
Didn't bother turning up. Ooh. And I think it's because he was just like, no, I'm not bothering. Because I think, to be fair to him, I know Ben, you didn't like The Descent, but he's a good director. That yeah. Dog Soldier, he's got a good name for himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just gone, nah, the studio's got too interfered in this. Mm-hmm. I've got the cast of EastEnders in this. I'm quitting.
Save for taking your name off the film, not turning up for the premiere is about the worst possible thing you can do.
Oh,
that's the clearest sign of I don't stand for this.
Yeah.
This doesn't represent me at all.
I know, yeah. Bad,
God, that's
it?
Awful. We'll talk about the film on its own merits, I'm sure, as we go through the review, but we've got to start off by comparing it to the del Toro films, because you can't not. You can't not.
Mm.
And this film, it just felt so grey and cold, whereas the Del Toro films were colourful and warm and vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And the Del Toro films were imaginative and whimsical. They drew you in to this magical and fantastical world. But this just felt like a really half-assed horror film.
Yeah.
There was no fantastical world for you to be drawn into. It just didn't work.
It felt like if Disney did a horror film and removed all the life and soul out of it, this is what you'd be given. They essentially gave us something on face value that they thought audiences would like. So gore, swearing, colour.
Yeah.
But people want depth. They want heart. They want to actually connect with people that they're trying to relate to on the screen. And it was just flat.
They also want a story.
Oh yeah, that was definitely missing. Yeah. I want my money back.
Mm-hmm. You know when you're at home and you're flicking through the channels and you go on sometimes like the Sony film channel or the horror channel or the sci-fi channel.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly believe it could have been on there. It looked that shit. The CGI, the film itself looked awful. And it wouldn't surprise me if I was, honestly, one of those straight-to-DVD films. I can't believe the budget and the actual backing behind this film, all the studio, all the money. And then I was like, oh, it's Lionsgate.
Oh my
pretty
God.
Sums it up.
Now, I am furious about the fact that the CGI is so woeful. Oh. I mean, you pump in so many millions and millions of dollars into a project. And what do? You want to make sure that the finished project that you give to people is going to be pristine, it's going to be clean, and it's going to look so fucking good. However, we're left with a big pile of crap, you know? When life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. But in this case, when you're given shit, make a turd fucking pie.
Okay, Jesus Christ.
I've never heard that.
Gemma's lost it.
I'm so angry because
Gemma has lost it.
If you're going to use the money, use it to what it needs to be made to.
Use it to make a third Hellboy film and give it to Del Toro again.
But there's no evidence of it.
Let's go back to the CGI. I thought it was very hit and miss, more miss than hit. The worst, the most egregious example of it is the fight in the field between Hellboy and the Giants.
Oh, Christ.
That was some of the ropiest, crappy CGI. There is a bit, I'd need to see it again to make sure, but there's a bit, I'm sure, where Hellboy ran through a sword.
His head
went through the sword rather than ducking underneath it. It was so weak, so cheap.
Yep.
Yeah. And it didn't work with Muse playing in the background.
Well, let's come to the music in a minute. I want to stick to the visuals for now, but we'll come to the music.
Okay.
The Hellboy costume was atrocious as well. Mm-hmm. So going back to the Del Toro ones, he looked as real as a crazy demon could look. In this film, his face looked rubbery.
Yeah.
It didn't in the Del Toro ones. Mm-hmm. It looked like a very good makeup job in those, but this looked like a big rubber mask that they just glued onto David Harbour's face. It was terrible.
He looked like an extra from that Finnish rock band Lordi.
Yeah.
Even when he was talking, I was looking closely at lips thinking, this isn't quite in sync because it's too hard to work with. But not only that, some of the characters look quite good. And, it's a horror film. There was this old kind of woman that had these like tits out when she was crawling on her back.
Remember her? The Baba Yaga.
Yeah, she looked really weird. But that looks great in films like Evil Dead. That would be absolutely fantastic. And as a horror film, I think that sort of stuff worked. And that's when you knew Neil Marshall probably got his way and made these creatures. And some of it was quite harrowing and scary, but it looked like it belonged in an episode of something like Ash vs. Evil Dead. It did not look like it should be in Hellboy.
No.
It's ridiculous.
And then to pick up on what Gemma was saying there, how the music just didn't work with it as well. All the way through the film, there's a lot of rock, indie rock type songs, and they just didn't fit the material at all. It was so incongruous. It was clearly Neil Marshall going, well, I like this band, I like Muse, and I like Royal Blood, or whoever the fuck else was in it. He's going, yeah, let's jam that song. It's like when we put the episodes together,
basically. I was just about to say, it's like this episode. Yeah.
We just jam in the music we like, which works for a podcast, I think, but not for a film. There shouldn't have been real music in it. It should have all just been a dramatic score that complemented the visuals. But he just jammed in all these indie rock tunes and it was fucking atrocious.
It just felt an absolute shambles. It didn't feel like anything was fluid enough to go with what was portrayed on screen. And it really made me angry. And you're right. If you're going to pick a song for a film, make sure it complements what's going on screen and the mood of it too. Don't start getting Matt Bellamy singing Uprising because it doesn't match with the gore fest that's happening or lack of.
Yeah, it didn't work at all. Shall we move on to some of the acting? Some
if
of the
we
characters?
Must. Oh,
yeah.
If we must.
Let's start with David Harbour as Hellboy himself. Now, I like David Harbour. He's been around for a long time. He spent about 20 years playing dickheads in suits. He's usually a dickhead lawyer or a dickhead FBI agent. And then he got Stranger Things, and now he's actually getting some big movies and stuff. So good on him. And I liked him a lot. He was perfectly fine, I thought, as Hellboy. But he doesn't have the charm or the dominating screen presence of Ron Perlman, because, hey, who does?
No. Exactly. But the annoying thing was, because they made it in like an R-rated or a 15, Eve swore too much.
And
it
didn't.
We'd never do that.
No,
that?
And that's fine because we're okay and we're just a podcast, but it was just trying to do the whole Deadpool thing too much. And in the end, I was just like, it doesn't flow. It's not like a normal conversation where fuck should be used, like exactly we do in this show, mostly me. But it was ridiculous. And I got to the point where I was like, Hellboy, stop saying fuck. It ain't clever. It's not cool. I sound like my mum. Don't keep swearing, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
No, I agree with you entirely.
I think it's so difficult to try and carve out a character that's already been loved by so many people from the original Hellboy and the Golden Army. And you're right, fair play to him. It was the best he got. He just gave it a bloody good go with what he was given. But again, I didn't really feel the you know, affiliation with him. I didn't really feel like I felt like I was on his side or anything like that.
It's because he wasn't given any good banter, wasn't given any good words to say. Essentially.
Well, structured sentences usually helps.
The worst thing in the film for me by a distance was Sasha Lane as Alice.
I agree.
I have never seen her in anything before, but clearly she's not much of an actress. Although it could be because she was putting on an abysmal English accent, and it is very hard to act well when you're trying to remember how to do your accent all the time. Her English accent was abomination. It was an abomination. Every line delivery was stilted, and it didn't seem like something an actual human being would say or say in that way. It was awful watching her.
I would like to vouch for her, not for this film, because you're right, she's terrible, but she's in American Honey and The Miseducation of Cameron Post. Two really good performances she's put in there, and I believe American Honey was her breakthrough. But again, dead behind the eyes.
Yeah.
No soul, no life, no heart. And it did feel like she was just reading off a board, off camera, just to deliver the lines and get the paycheck at the end. Yeah. And that was disappointing.
There's a reason we haven't heard of her before. Because she can't act. That's not being old. But we might be saying, oh, what was the accent? Or was, I thought she was shit in every scene. I wasn't convinced. She was crap, and I don't want to see her in anything again. I'm sorry, she's done.
I do like her previous work. She is a good actress. I just think, again, it's the whole gift of not being given the materials, that anything to work and actually deliver a really good character.
And speaking of not being given the materials, Jin from Lost.
Yeah.
Oh,
Daniel Day-Kin.
He was given nothing to do, old Jin.
No.
I'm not calling him Daniel Day-Kin.
No, it's
Jin. He's Jin from Lost.
Yes.
He had nothing to do. The one character and the one actor that I really thought was great, really worked for me, was Mila Jovovich as the Blood Queen.
I agree.
I think she was kind of great, actually. She's a great actress. I've always liked her, and she's brilliant in this. She's the only one who seems to be having fun with the material and sinking her teeth into it. Whenever she wasn't on screen, I was like, bring her back. I don't want to see these idiots. Bring her back.
She had such a presence about her, and I thought she really delivered kind of on the camp kind of level.
Yeah.
She knew she was a villain, and she really did amp it up to 100. I loved her. I thought she was a marvellous addition.
But wasn't it quite offensive that she lowered herself to do this? She doesn't need to do this sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, because she's usually doing the Resident Evil films, which are much, much classier than this.
But then she's working alongside the cast of EastEnders. I'm sorry, that
Big Mo.
That bit, I wanted to leave the cinema at that point. I went and got another drink. Do you remember?
You did.
Stood up and went, I need a drink. We went and bought alcohol in the cinema because that at that point when she's in the chippy and she's saying, get out, and I was like, what are you doing? Like, is this how they are they funding the film? Are they helping with the budget here? Why have you got the cast of EastEnders serving them chips?
Well, remember, she's Gary Oldman's sister.
That doesn't matter.
It still blows my mind that Big Mo is Gary Oldman's sister.
But still, what was all that about?
I don't know.
Why have you got it was offensive, it was kind of racist against the British people. I found it offensive that that's how you associate England with bloody Albert Street.
Oh God.
Albert Square.
Let's talk about the pig monster thing.
Right.
What are our thoughts on the big scouse pig monster?
Hated him.
Hated it.
I wanted him to get in the sea. I wanted him to just disappear. I wanted to make bacon out of him. I wanted to put him in a pork sandwich. I was ready for him to disappear off of the screen. He was terrible.
Do you know who he reminded me of?
Go on.
The Juggernaut.
Yeah.
From X-Men The Last
Juggernaut.
Stand.
Bitch.
He was just like that to me. And it's a shame because it was Stephen Graham doing the voice, and I love Stephen Graham.
You are kidding me.
Yeah, he's
no.
a great actor, but it's a terrible, terrible character.
Just awful. It's kind of like Jar Jar Binks just on the screen, being annoying. CGI was terrible. Just get rid of him. And every time he came on the screen, I was just cringing. And I just kept looking. I've never looked at my watch so many times during a film.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because he tried to make him relatable. Like, oh, Jeffs and Jeffs were the best of him. No, he's just an annoying twat.
Speak about relatable. What about the scene of him and the Blood Queen in the house watching reality TV.
I love that, and she just basically ripping every single TV show a whole new one, like X Factor and Love Island.
I hated it.
I loved it. I thought that's my queen.
I agree with what she's saying, but that scene didn't need to exist. We don't need a little whimsical scene showing that she gets it, that she hates reality. She's the fucking Blood Queen. She's a mythical creature who's sparred with King Arthur. She's not going to be watching fucking Love Island. It's ridiculous.
There's not a lot going on in the country. I mean,
Christ.
Give her credit.
Should we talk about the ending?
If we have to.
At least it did end.
Yeah. What a big dull dud that ending was.
Yeah, but I was also furious because it was inciting that more is to come.
Oh, yeah, because we see Abe Sapien at the end, don't we? Setting up a sequel that's not going to happen because it's bombing. It's bombed at the cinema. But that ending, Hellboy's fighting the Blood Queen and she's unleashed all these demons who are going around London smashing shit up. And it was one of the few times where the CGI actually looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That creature that knocked down London Bridge or whatever
that
was
awesome.
That looked pretty badass. And you're thinking, okay, this could be a cool ending. He then lops off the Blood Queen's head and all those demons just get sucked back into hell. At no point does anyone fight the fucking demons. Why were the demons there then?
Do you know they ran out of budget at that point? That was the quickest battle ever.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Don't juice me up with demons and then leave me dangling.
No.
I want to see a demon fight.
Stat.
They literally released them. They created a bit of havoc for about 12 seconds. Yeah. And then they got sucked back into hell.
Terrible.
I mean, what a shit show.
That's the game you play when you're a satanic monster.
I've got nothing else to say. I'm angry. I'm exhausted.
Shall we score it?
It's infuriating.
Yeah. Ben, we started, so we'll finish with you.
So compared to the Del Toro movies, this is obviously abysmal. But even on its own terms, if you pretended the other films didn't exist, this one still sucks. The story's boring, the direction is sloppy, and the acting is mostly terrible. I'm going to give it 2 out of 10, and that is purely for Milla Jovovich.
Mm. Mark?
That's really hard, isn't it? Just 2. I don't want to say anything else about this film. I'm just angry that the fact is we didn't get the third Hellboy, and we've got this.
I think to save ourselves from absolute madness, we should all go home tonight and watch Hellboy followed by the Golden Army afterwards, just to forget about this awful memory.
Yep.
I'm going to also give it a 2 out of 10. So, in hindsight, Hellboy gets a skip to the end. 2 out of 10. Shame.
It's competition time!
Pitch perfect.
How was that?
It's like listening to a song.
I'm exhausted. Right then, this is the time of the episode that we give away some awesome prizes but announce the winners from our last week's episode. And I think we gave away too much, if I'm honest. I know we keep saying this, but there was a lot, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Too much.
To kick things off, because we had a rewatch of Alien. Listening back, I really enjoyed that as well. Good film, that one.
It was good.
Yep. So we had a Last Exit cap. Bit different. We normally give away t-shirts. Mm-hmm. We had a cap.
Plot twist.
And all we said was, what year did Alien come out? Quite simple, really. So, Ben.
The year of our Lord, 1979.
It's very true. In the words of Billy Corgan as well, 1979. That's a great song, by the way. Smashing Pumpkins. Unbelievable.
Okay.
It is.
Cheers.
I just want to say. There
Thank
we go.
You for sharing.
And the winner is at StoneJ666. So you'll be getting that in the post. And because we masturbated over Denis Villeneuve, we had a replicant t-shirt from Blade Runner 2049, which is an awesome t-shirt.
The very shirt I'm wearing right now.
Oh,
look
synergy.
At that. It's like you knew. Mm-hmm. And the simple question we put out there was, Harrison Ford plays which character in Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049?
Rick Deckard.
It's true. And at LostGate92, we'll be getting that in the post. And again, post those pictures of yourself in these t-shirts. We bloody love it. We had a huge Funko giveaway. We had an Alien Queen, which is the large pop, which is brilliant. We had a Xenomorph mini keyring. We had the original Alien pop. We had the 40th anniversary pop with Ripley in space, which looks like a really smart one. We had the vinyl 2-pack, and we said, not as in 2-pack the wrapper. That would have been amazing.
That so
just
much.
Throw that in the bundle. Why have you given me this wrapper? Well, you've got it. We said, who directed Alien? Real simple question. So, Ben?
Ridley Scott.
It's true. And at Shelley Phoenix with triple X at the end, we'll be getting that. And it's not a porn site. I did check.
I bet you did.
Anyone that's got triple X on their Twitter handle usually has their baps out, which is degrading.
Did you need to vet that, didn't you?
Yes, we did. Richard Sounds came along and gave us some Lindy BNX 60 wireless headphones. And we flipped it. We said, what was the best album of all time? And Matt Andrews on Facebook said, Deftones, Around the Fur.
Good choice.
A very good choice. I saw a lot of people as well that were saying Corey. I know what you're doing.
Pandering.
You're not genuine Corey files.
Yeah, trying to get our attention.
No, it worked, but...
They're not convicted Corey files like we are.
Exactly.
Born we're on the and register. Bred.
Exactly. Did you know that Corey's going to be in Sheffield at a Comic-Con in May?
Shut up. Yeah.
Of course I know.
I know. Ben's got VIP passes. But yeah, that's going to be good. I can't wait for that. We had an Us sign poster by Jordan Peele. Winston Duke and Lupita Nyong'o. Close?
Nyong'o, he said.
Nyong'o.
Lupita.
Come on, what's the pronunciation?
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah, her as well. They both signed it. We were that lucky. And we said, who directed Us? So, Gemma?
It's Jordan Peele.
It's true. And James H. on email will be winning that. So
email.
That's a good one.
Wow.
And finally, we had a whole set of Alien Funkos for anyone that left us a 5-star iTunes rating, which I think is pretty good. This one comes from Scarlet 1991. Greatest podcast in the history of audio.
Wow. Big words.
A lot has happened in the world of audio.
But it's bloody good. Right. Do you think we should give away some more stuff?
Yeah, go on.
To celebrate the release of Hellboy, we have some Funko Pops of Hellboy, which is good. That's good, to be fair. Unlike the film.
Yeah, and the pops will look more realistic than the CGI did.
Yes, that's true.
More money would have been spent. Mm.
So we've got a triple pack. We've got Hellboy, we've got Abe, and we've got Liz, the free pack, which are really nice.
Oh, they're from the original Hellboy.
Not this shite.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
I wouldn't give that away. That would be fair to listeners. Let's make it really simple. Who directed Hellboy? The original decent version of the film.
The one we like.
Because no one directed this recent piece of shit. This has no kind of relevance to the episode, but it's an excuse to give them away. We've got the double pack, finally, from Office Space. The Funkos of Michael Bolton and Samuel. You know, they're smashing the computer.
Cool.
They're really cool. Let's say, who plays the part of Milton in Office Space? Mm-hmm. There's no relevance, but who cares? What a prize that is. That's one thing I would like. I don't have many Funkos, but that's some I would. Last Exit have come along, and because we're masturbating over Finchy shortly, we have a Fight Club t-shirt, which is very, very cool. And let's say, we're going to make it a bit more difficult. What song by the Pixies is played at the end of the movie?
That is a good question.
I don't want to make it too easy anymore.
Make them work for it.
Last Exit have come along and said, right, we're going to do things a bit different this time. We're going to do a skip to the end bundle. So in this, you're going to get a Blade Runner Nexus wristband pack for Ben. You're going to get a Jaws Amity Island mug from Mark. And from Gemma, you're going to get a Shining drinks coaster all together in a tote bag from Fight Club. So
nice.
It's like a skip to the end bundle.
Nice.
I think we need to make it a bit more exclusive for our listeners. So where did we get the name Skip to the End from?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Think on.
See what they say.
Think on.
And brothers are going to give away a 24-pack of the Palmer Violet Cider that we had last week.
Oh, delicious.
Pretty nice that was.
It is good stuff.
We're going to give it away to someone that gives us a 5-star iTunes rating. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. So what we'll do, we'll come back in 2 weeks' time and announce the winners of all this amazing goodness.
And leave right now, go back to my room, play the guitar. Masturbate to broadband speed internet porn. I'm gonna come on those tits, huh? Yeah.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about a director's best work and we each come up with our favourite film of that person. On the last episode, we picked out David Finchy Fincher, good old Finchmeister extraordinaire. So we're going to be talking about his films. There is a lot to choose from his back catalogue. I mean, I don't know about you two, but this one, trickiest one yet.
Ooh, very tough.
I agree.
Yeah. Let's get started anyway with deciding which one of our Fincher films is our favourite. So I want to throw it to Ben first. Ben, Finch me.
Zodiac.
Oh,
nice.
My God, he started with that.
It's Fincher's dark and brooding story about the manhunt for the Zodiac killer in 1960s and 70s San Francisco. I was always destined to like this film, I think, because it melds together two of my favourite types of stories, true crime stories and investigative journalism stories. I love both of them. Jam them together. I'm sold.
Yeah.
It's one of the signs of how brilliant this film is that in real life, the case remains unsolved. We still do not know who the Zodiac Killer was. So to make a film that effectively has no ending, that has no easy resolution, but to still make it a dramatically satisfying piece, it shows real skill on the part of both Fincher and the writer James Vanderbilt. And the great thing that Fincher and Vanderbilt did is they put so much research into this film. They didn't just use the existing police reports and news stories. They actually went out and interviewed witnesses, investigators and surviving victims themselves.
No.
They effectively reinvestigated the whole case. And it was this care, this level of truth, this search for truth that manifests itself in this wonderfully detailed and vividly realised film. The film looks amazing, doesn't it? As Fincher's films always do, it looks absolutely gorgeous. But it's also startling for how much subtle CGI is used. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but you can find online, I think on YouTube, you can find a video that shows all the CGI that's been used in this. And it's things where you go, I would never have imagined that was CGI. Like, do you remember, there's quite a famous shot in the film of a car wending its way through the streets of San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's a top-down view. It looks like Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you think, you know, oh, that's a great drone shot or a helicopter shot. No, all CGI.
Oh,
and you don't know this until you see this documentary.
Amazing.
But it's really subtle. And you've got to talk about the cast as well. Look at the cast in this film. Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jakey boy
himself.
Yeah, unbelievable.
It's a phenomenal cast, and they're all doing great work. But the thing I love about this film is it's not a film of action. It's a film of tone and mood. It's a dialogue-heavy film, but also it isn't afraid to use silence. it lets the film breathe. It lets you just soak in the atmosphere of not just the film itself, but also the way that the 60s and 70s are so vividly rendered on screen. It looks fabulous. You would genuinely believe this is a relic from 50 years ago rather than a film that was made recently. It's so beautiful to look at. And to me, this movie is the perfect example of what Roger Ebert meant when he said, no good movie is too long and no bad movie is short enough. Because this is another film that is close to 3 hours long,
yep.
But it never feels it. It is never less than compelling and gripping. It's a masterpiece.
Oh my God, I love Zodiac so much.
I've only got the director's cut on Blu-ray, so I've only ever seen that.
That's
I never
okay.
saw it at the cinema. I don't know the extras. I haven't ever looked in. But as a piece of work from start to finish, it's flawless. It's absolutely awesome and one of the most beautiful looking films you'll ever see. Like you said, you'd think it was filmed back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And that documentary I talked about with the CGI, I think that will be in the Blu-ray extras. So have
nice.
A look for that. Yeah.
The whole case of the Zodiac Killer is so compelling. Mm-hmm. It's disturbing and it's just frightening, but at the same time it sucks you in just like the film. And you're right, tone is so important to what makes the film so unique, and this is one of the greatest examples of that.
And Fincher, because he and Vanderbilt did reinvestigate the case, there are certain characters or a character in particular where this film points you to think this guy probably was the Zodiac killer.
Okay.
They can't come out right and say it, of course, because that would be slander, but they've clearly presented their case of who they think it was. But again, as I say, no one's ever been convicted.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And that's one of the films, again, I know we all love Donnie Darko, but that was one of the first films that really made me go, okay, Jakey Boy's here for the long run. He's not just an indie actor that's done well in his debut. This is when you're like, okay, he's one of the big boys.
Yeah, not just a pretty face, but he's got gravitas.
Yeah. That's it. That's what I was about to say, exactly that. Those
gravitas.
Words exactly. I want to watch that now. Yeah. Well, you haven't done that, have we, as a rewatch?
No.
There's still time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amazing.
Come on, Mark, what's your pick?
The Greatest Murder Story of All Time, 7.
Ooh, great
wonderful
shout.
Choice.
An absolute awesome film. Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt together as two detectives are absolutely unreal. You've got the old established cop who knows what he's doing, and then you've got this young blood, Brad Pitt, who, again, started off his career in not great... This is what we're doing a lot today, like Leonardo DiCaprio... This, for me, was like, God, Brad Pitt is a very good actor. He's not just a pretty boy like in, is it Meet Joe Black? I think he's just there for his looks and he's, you know, just sucking on some bloody like peanut butter for 3 hours.
Thelma and Louise too.
Exactly.
He was just there for the look.
But they hunt this killer who uses the seven deadly sins as his motive. And for me, from the start to the finish, I was on the edge of my seat. I couldn't believe how well done it was. Again, as we've said, it's one of the best looking films of all time. I think it's unbelievable. The acting and the writing is so good. And for me, probably one of the best movies of the 90s. It's that good. The dark visuals are so horrible. And when we see the greed and the gluttony as...
Try again.
Was he allergic to bread? Get him! Here comes a bat! Dead.
The dark visuals are so well. And when it comes to greed and gluttony...
Well done.
The...
Leave it all in, it's fine.
Yeah, that's what she said. But the gore and the way that they're trapped up and all the food and the... Oh, it's gross. And he's still alive. And that jump is like what you get with Jaws with the face in the boat. It's one of those scenes that you never know when it's going to jump. My God. But we have to say it. John Doe, played by Kevin Spacey, is one of the most harrowing villains, one of the most creepiest killers. And for people playing pedo bingo, there you go, you can have him.
Not a pedo.
He probably is.
Not convicted.
Allegedly.
Nope. Nope, it's just a sex pest.
Yeah,
sex pest bingo starts next week. On skip to the end.
Look forward to that.
Yes,
stick around.
But the twist, what anyone ever says. I know now we always get the GIF files and we get the parodies and all this, but what's in the box? The very first time you see that, watching Brad Pitt's emotions when he realizes it's his wife. That moment, the van pulls up. It's all scheduled so well. You need a mastermind to get it that well done. And even better, FedEx actually turned up on time. If that was DPD, that wouldn't happen.
Or parcel
I was sitting there looking at his watch like, it should have been here 2 hours ago. Oh, there's a little card, saw you weren't in. What, in the middle of a fucking desert, for fuck's sake?
That's yoga for you.
Yeah. That would have been a film I wouldn't have wanted to see. But we see it, and it's his wife's head, and it's just harrowing. And that's a film, and that moment stayed with me since the moment I watched it, and that shows good filmmaking. A film that stays with you forever is a good film.
Yeah.
There you go.
You never see the head. You just see the blonde hair with like sort of red streaks within it.
It's horrible.
And it's left to the audience's imagination knowing that it's older Gwyneth Paltrow in the box. Whoops.
And even though Kevin Spacey has done things that, you know, we shan't discuss now, you've got to separate the art from the artist at times because this is a magnificent film and it is a great performance from him. And if you were to write it off, if you were to say, right, I can't enjoy any Kevin Spacey films anymore, you're doing a disservice to the thousands of people who are involved in making that film. True. Other than him.
Yeah.
There were other actors in it. There was a director, writers, producers, yeah, you know, key grips, best boys, yeah, everyone else below the line,
never
cinematographers.
Forget the
never forget the best boy. So why should we piss on their work because of the antics of one idiot?
Yeah.
You shouldn't.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Mm. And you've got to still enjoy his films. I still watch his films. I can't. Yeah. I'm not one of these people like, oh, I will never watch one of his films ever again, because I watched them before. American Beauty is one of my favourite films. I used to watch it. I'll still watch it, yeah, again.
I wouldn't watch a new film of his.
There won't be any.
No, well, yeah, you say this. Mel Gibson's making films, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Everybody seems to have forgotten what happened there.
Exactly.
And we'll probably get another Lost Prophets album one day.
Nope.
For the bingo.
Probably not.
Nope. I don't think so.
Last Train Home.
Nope. Just a thought. I disagree.
But yeah.
Oh, let's move on, please.
So my choice.
Yes. No crossover again. Well done, guys.
I've gone for Gone Girl.
Oh.
Wow.
I watched this again recently.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. No, none of us have had Fight Club.
I know.
Crazy talk, but carry on.
I know. Well, it was a very tricky decision, as I mentioned at the start, but this is a film that intrigues, interests and disturbs me all in equal measures. And it's also a success in the rare occasion where it's faithful to the original book written by Gillian Flynn, and it's just as entertaining. Ben Affleck shines as Nick, who's not exactly a very sympathetic character, and I think this is why I love Gone Girl so much. Generally, in kidnap stories, you sympathise with the victim's husband or the victim's wife and the victim themselves. But who do you sympathise with in this story? There's not a lot of people you want to root for. So Ben Affleck is fantastic as the dick. Rosamund Pike, she is the one that steals the whole entire show. When we first meet her, she's very aloof. She's very innocent. She's a lovely, cool kind of woman that you'd want to hang out with in parties. You'd want to get together in a relationship and ultimately marry. The tone shift when we find out all is not what it seems, that Amy has not been kidnapped, but dun dun dun, spoiler alert, she orchestrated the whole damn thing herself. It's the cool girl speech. The cool girl speech is lifted from the book directly, so word for word, it's exactly the same thing. And the reason why I absolutely love this is it's almost like a comment on society that a cool girl is created by people, you know. Oh, there's the cool girl. She's really cool. I like to hang out with her. She dresses in a certain way. She must really like chili hot dogs. But that's not the case, because she herself says, I'm not a cool girl. I'm just trying to fit in with the illusion of what you want me to fit in. And it's a real kind of air punch moment for feminism in a way, but it's also a real kick in the dick, because it shows that she is so self-aware and she's going to do what it takes to get back at Nick. She doesn't give a flying fuck. But I applaud the whole delivery of that section, and the film completely changes in direction. Let's not forget when she kind of orchestrates that her kidnapper, Desi, is raping her. Beforehand, you see her almost kind of fornicating herself with a wine bottle to insinuate that she's been raped.
Yeah.
And then seconds later, poses in front of the CCTV camera, sort of crying hysterically and screaming to make out that she's just been attacked. Rosamund Pike was nominated for an Oscar. She didn't get it. Somebody else got it, who was a little bit better. But nevertheless, this is not to detract away from the fact that she is just extraordinary in this film.
She's brilliant, and it's such a Machiavellian character, so well done. But I have to give credit to Affleck, because he's about as perfect casting as you could get, because the character, for all that he is the victim, he's if you read the book, he is written as a bit of a douche,
yes,
a bit of a smug, smarmy douche. Mm-hmm. And no offence to Ben Affleck, because I like a lot of his work, but he kind of is a smug, smarmy douche.
It.
So there's that the bit that plays up to it in the film is where they're taking the pictures of him that are going to go in the papers or whatever, and he can't help but do that smirk.
Yeah.
Like and a shit-eating grin.
Yeah, he just doesn't look sympathetic, even though his wife is missing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they couldn't have got anyone better for that than Affleck.
Mm-hmm. Also, the music is scored by Trent Reznor.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece.
And it gives that uneasiness kind of feel, like it's very relaxing, very ambient, but there's kind of a shift that makes you just so disturbed, you know, that something isn't as all as it seems. It's not this perfect kind of vision that Fincher is trying to give the audience.
It's a masterpiece. It really is. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best films I've seen in a very long time. Yeah. I never get bored of rewatching it. It's on Netflix. I keep watching it again and again. It's brilliant.
I would say it's one of the best films of this decade.
Yeah, and again, it's not a short film.
Nope. No.
But it doesn't feel over long.
The bit that always stays with me is when she's back at this cottage away with her ex, and she slashes his throat and starts bleeding all over herself and rolling in the blood, makes sure it's all over. And that is a scene that sticks with me.
And the way how the camera does that, because it kind of fades to black and then fades back into the action and keeps fading. It's almost like the blood spurting out of his
throat. It's so well done.
Well done.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Fantastic stuff.
I'm surprised we didn't say Fight Club.
Mm.
It was my second choice.
Yeah.
And it was that. It's all week I've been between the mm-hmm. two. It's a difficult one.
Teetering. I was teetering between seven.
Yeah. Come on then, social media.
Alrighty then. Mark Holscher on Twitter, at MSH73, has said, Fight Club. I watched it about seven times in the theatre. A perfect movie.
Brilliant.
It's really cracking. Is.
Yeah.
A magnificent film. David Roper on Facebook has said, one of the most talented, consistently inventive directors of the past 20 years. So many great films, but you can't top seven. Bleak, ruthless, perfect.
Yep. Can't mm-hmm. argue with that.
With you on that, David. Jay on Twitter, at green.emo, has said, Zodiac for sure, one of the best films ever created.
There you go.
Don't it's disagree.
Wonderful.
David Braybrook on Facebook, he's not given a reason, he's just said The Game.
Okay.
No, I don't. I can't remember if I've ever actually seen
is
The
that
Game.
Is Michael Douglas?
Yeah, I've not seen that, I don't think.
I don't think
yeah.
I ever have.
That's mad, isn't it? Yeah. It sometimes blows my mind that we haven't seen a film by one of our favourite directors. Yeah. Like this Enemy film. I don't know why we haven't seen it.
Oh, the Villeneuve one, yeah. The Game, I think, was one of Fincher's earlier ones, and I don't think it got particularly good reviews.
Mm. No.
So I just never really fancied it.
Oh, well.
And then finally, on Twitter, the Ginch, at that Ginch lad, said, even though there's no killings or twists, The Social Network is a near-perfect movie in my book.
Aaron Sorkin's dialogue in
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Isn't that as well the soundtrack from Nine Inch Nails man himself?
It is
yeah,
indeed.
They won the Oscar for that, didn't they? He and Atticus Ross.
Nine Beautiful. Inch Nails, matey boy.
Yes, there we go.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Every single time.
Three of his films totally dominated the vote. Seven, Fight Club, and Zodiac. Seven won strongly, that was the number one, with Fight Club and Zodiac pretty much neck and neck in second place. Surprisingly, or not really surprisingly, no votes at all for Alien 3 or Benjamin Button.
Shocking.
Not a single vote.
I'm genuinely surprised.
But more amazingly, genuinely shockingly,
yeah.
not a single vote other than you, Gemma, for Gone Girl.
No,
which is
extraordinary.
Because it's a magnificent film.
Wow, well, I'll keep repping Gone Girl till the day I die. Mm-hmm.
I read today as well that he took 18 months out of everything after Alien 3. It fucks his life up that much. He just had a complete zone out. Not like, oh, I'm not going to write or anything. He just did nothing.
Same here when I watched it.
It's a better play.
It's a long process.
Whose turn is it to masturbate next?
It's me.
Brilliant.
Oh, do you want a drum roll?
Always.
We've had some really good ones lately.
Yeah. Let's not fuck it up. On the next episode, we will be masturbating over... The Farrelly Brothers!
Yes. When he kissed her on the lips, he instantly went hard. She was crying, her face was slick, but she let him pull her clothes off. She smelled like sweet fruit. Her snatch was small, too, the pubic hair light and sparse. Yet when he fingered her, he didn't feel anything. She wasn't getting wet.
It's rewatch time. Based on the novel by Bret Easton Ellis, The Rules of Attraction follows a group of wealthy, hedonistic college students as they share their lives, their drugs, and their beds. The film focuses on aloof drug dealer Sean, played by James Vanderbeek, shy virgin Lauren, played by Shannon Sossaman, and Lauren's extroverted bisexual ex Paul, played by Ian Somerhalder, as they find themselves in a love triangle that threatens to impact their lives and the lives of people around them. The cast also features Jessica Biel and Kit Pardew, and is written and directed by Roger Avery. Now, you've both seen it, haven't you? We've established this.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw it at the cinema.
Yeah.
Out of an accident, actually. I went to see, you'll laugh, but I went to see Kevin Smith at the O2.
Oh, right.
And to watch the end of his show, because he does about 3.5 hours, I missed the last train home. Yes, the Lost Prophets song, Last Train Home.
Is that what that song was about?
Yes, all about that.
Thought so.
So in London, you can go and see a film after midnight.
Amazing.
Wow.
So it was the same day that Up came out. Up wasn't showing at midnight, but I thought I can either sleep rough or I can go and sit in the cinema for 3 hours. And I went in and watched this, and we'll talk about it in a bit.
Yeah.
But yes, that's how I actually saw it on the big screen.
Well done.
What about you?
Yeah, I've seen it on the big screen.
You not got a story behind it?
No, I just went there one night, watched the film.
You didn't get a big release though, did it?
It's a small, fairly independent film. I didn't see it at the cinema. For the first time I saw it, I was high as shit on magic mushrooms. Which, bearing in mind, were perfectly legal at the time, I hasten to add. I saw it at my friend Nick's house, and he raved about the film. He said, you've got to watch this, but let's eat these mushrooms first. Alrighty then. So I loved it then, because you'll love anything when you're on shrooms, and I still love it now. It's a very good film. So let's talk about it in more detail. Gemma, so then, is it Rules of Attraction or Rules of Accaction?
Attraction, because I'm attracted to this film very, very much. It's a Greek tragedy disguised as a teen coming-of-age film.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting and unflinching take on uni life, but the complete antithesis of what uni life should be. What I love about this film is the creativity of how it's portrayed on screen. The story is great, the acting is great, but the whole shot of camera angles, the use of music, not just playing normally but reverse, I think it's inventive, I think it's creative, and it's a fresher breath air that challenges viewers, and it is a joy to watch again.
Magnificent, Mark.
I don't know what to say.
What she said.
For me, it was like Clockwork Orange meets Fight Club meets Donnie Darko. It blew my mind. And from the first day I seen it, I didn't realise how many times until I watched it again recently, I knew this film so well. Like you, Ben, I dabbled in my days at uni, and I've watched this on a different drug, and it blew my mind.
Was it life?
It was life and Jesus. And honestly, this film... we'll get to it, is outstanding and like nothing else you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's an underrated gem of a film that so few people know about. And to pick up on something you were saying there, Gemma, about how it's a good representation of university life, I think it does a great job of showing how at that age, in your late teens, early 20s, all your emotions are bigger.
Yes.
Everything seems to cut deeper and all your problems seem to be far worse than they actually are.
They are amplified and up to 11.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. Let's start with the direction of the film. Let's start with Roger Avery here. He throws in so many bold directorial choices for me. So let's start right at the start of the film. So the intro, when we meet our three main characters, all at the same party. First of all, you meet Lauren. It shows her going around the party, what she gets up to. Then when you get to the end of her intro, the film rewinds. And then we get to meet the second character, Paul, and we see what he gets up to at the party. Then it rewinds. Then we meet our third character, Sean. And again, the same thing occurs. And I think that's just such a very... clever and visually arresting bit of direction and a really elegant way of getting to know the leads.
I love it because it also gives them the chance of possibly changing their future, mm-hmm. but still they repeat the same mistakes that they make, or they find themselves in horrifying situations that they can't get out of. I could not applaud this film enough for using that type of direction. And we see it again at the middle party and, of course, the end party. I've not seen anybody else use this, and rightfully so, because this is such a maverick decision to really impact on what you're watching.
Considering the film is set around three leads, it's all about their love and their life and how they all get tangled up with each other. To get three introductions done within the first 7 or 8 minutes, it's masterful. Yeah. It's brilliant. I love it. It's so original and it's so creative, and it should have been done before. But by that point, I'm like, right, I don't like any of these characters. They're not likable at all.
No, it's true. No.
But I know who they all are. Yeah. And I do really fancy the girl.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. There's another bit of directorial flourish that I like. It's when we see the characters of Sean and Lauren going about their day. They're both getting up in the morning and it's a split screen. You've got
genius.
Sean on the left, Lauren on the right. They're going about their day and then eventually they meet each other in a hallway and the two sides of the screen merge into one shot. Again, just a brilliant flourish.
And what I love about that is even when they actually join and the screen actually goes together, we then get only their face and then the other one at two different times. And I love the way that we're seeing both of them reacting to each other's conversation. You never get that in a conversation. It's always just one or the other, or both of them from a side. And you're seeing her just laugh and him just like not giving a shit, throwing stuff over his shoulder. And it's really intimate, but it works.
I just thought it made the whole conversation and their interaction with each other more intense. Like Ben mentioned at the beginning, feelings at that age is bigger and amplified, and we feel things a lot more deeper than we should. And having the camera so close up to their faces, it felt like you were in each of their positionings, like experiencing that conversation with the other person. It really did sort of like boost that a lot more.
Yeah, you were in their shoes.
Yes,
it felt like.
Definitely.
And the third biggest directorial flourish for me is all of Victor's backstory.
Yes. Unbelievable.
So we hear that Victor's been travelling around Europe, and then we see this video of his European adventures, all filmed on a camcorder, and it's shown in a quick cut montage style with Victor's rapid sort of coked up voice over the
top. It's insane.
It's genius, isn't it? It's what, I don't know, 5 minutes long, and you see him go through Holland, France, England, all these places, hooking up with these women, taking all these drugs, getting into adventures. It's so brilliant.
Earlier on when I said Hellboy was like a loud, obnoxious music video, this is a good example where a music video inspires such a creative bit of filming. It felt like something for an MTV generation. You know, it felt quick, it felt rapid, it felt fast, and once you start to get to know one bit, you're moving on to the next bit immediately. And that's what traveling is like, and it only focuses on the bits that you want to focus on. There was probably some really boring bits that he did in his trip, but he focused on the bits that gave impact, that made you sort of stand up and go, whoa, I want to learn more. Too late, he's in Amsterdam.
You think you'll get bored at that clip. It's actually 8.5 minutes.
Is it?
And that's mad, isn't it?
But
you're completely tuned in. He's like, went to Amsterdam, met this girl, got a thing, fingered around the bed, went into bed. And it's literally like that fast all the way through for 8.5 minutes. But the way it's chopped, you're there with him on the whole of the trip around Europe. Yeah. And it's like, that was amazing. And it's totally irrelevant. And then it just stops and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It doesn't need to exist. No. It could quite happily have not been in the film, but the film would be poorer without it because it's brilliant.
It's amazing.
Just a bravura bit of filmmaking. And it's a real shame what happened to Roger Avery because he's initially famous for coming up with the story with Quentin Tarantino for Pulp Fiction. Oh. So he, I believe, won an Oscar alongside Tarantino for Pulp Fiction. And then he went off and did his own films. He did Killing Zoe. Did you ever see that?
That's a great film. Eric Stoltz, right?
Yeah. And then he did this one. And not long after this, I think it was 4 or 5 years, something like that, he ended up getting in a car crash where he killed someone and ended up going to prison. And that effectively ruined his career.
Oh.
Yeah, which is a shame because he's clearly a talented guy with, you know, some wacky ideas that work.
He has ideas above a station that I don't think is easy to replicate or try and copy.
It's bad, isn't it? Because usually they say people's careers turn into a car crash. It literally did. Yeah. That's awful. Yeah. That's really bad because I was actually thinking to myself, why is he not on the scene anymore? Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take it he's out now and he's...
Yes, I believe so.
He's probably just working in co-op or something.
Yeah.
That sucks, doesn't it? Because he could have been the next, I don't know, someone like Tarantino.
He could have continued to elevate his career and make bold and creative decisions.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
It's a shame. Let's move off from Avery then. Let's talk about some of the actors. So let's start with James Van Der Beek as Sean Bateman. So first of all, I should say that Sean Bateman is the brother of Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. So the two films, or the two books rather, are linked. I think Van Der Beek is fucking amazing in this film as Sean. So different from the soppy piece of shit he played in Dawson's Creek.
Joey's rejection really hit him hard, eh?
The first scene when he's hitting on the girl at the party, he just looks savage.
Yeah.
He looks like a beast waiting to strike. And then when he's having sex with her, he looks feral.
You know what? I wrote in my notes, he reminded me of a shark.
Yeah.
Because his eyes are just black.
Yeah.
There's no emotion whatsoever. And he's just circling around his prey and then attacks.
Yeah.
By boning her!
And he has this brilliant way of... He looks down, he points his head down, but he points his eyes up, and it just looks so goddamn sinister.
Monstrous.
Yeah. It reminds me of Jake in Donnie Darko, those shots of his face really up close. And it's like, how brave is that? Because you were the pretty boy.
Mm-hmm.
Every girl loved you for being
I was more of a pacey kind of girl.
Okay, but most people love Dawson in Dawson's Creek. Mm-hmm. He's this heartthrob. To then go and do this role, which is the most unlikable, trashy character.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Big decision for him.
Well, it's worth noting he is still playing trashy characters. He's currently in a Fox TV show called Pose, where he plays a really obnoxious businessman who works at Trump Tower. And he's marvellous.
Yeah.
I like seeing James Van Der Beek as a dick.
He played himself, or a version of himself, in a show called Don't Trust the Bitch
in Apartment 23. Yeah.
Which was on Netflix in the UK. I don't know if it still is, but he was very, very funny in that, playing himself. Yeah.
He's so underrated.
He is incredibly underrated.
Jesus.
He's a good actor, and I love him in this film. Something I read the other day, which I didn't know, is that James Franco was initially cast as Sean, but then after doing the few sort of test shots, Avery just didn't like him and got rid of him.
And then James went and did it in real life. Most of that shit, didn't he? That's the truth.
Allegedly.
Yeah. That's literally it.
Like, still yet to go
to court. Real. Yeah, we're not on set now, dude.
Let's talk about Shannon Sossaman for a minute.
Oh.
It was one of the first performances she gave, and I thought she was absolutely brilliant. The thing I love is how she will just break out into these broad smiles and these giggling fits, seemingly at random.
Yeah.
I just love her.
I think it's that kind of naivety and frailty of being a girl that's gone through puberty and that's having this great big life lesson of being on her own. It's that innocence of adolescence, which sadly later on we find out is just cruelly attacked in a way.
Yeah.
But she's just the epitome of somebody that is falling in love for the first time, or falling in lust for the first time, and it's a real giddy kind of feeling. She's marvellous.
Yeah.
I love the fact she has to read books with loads of STDs in to put herself going out, and then when she's with that really seedy teacher and gives him head, see her face of just going like, oh god, I've got to do this, but I've got to. And it's just like, you just feel sorry for her. But yeah, she's again someone I've not seen a lot of.
Yeah, this is it. She's so winning and so charming that you think she would be a big star. Mm-hmm. She's been working steadily for 20 years, but she's never had that big breakthrough role. Yeah.
The only films that I can think of was she was in A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger.
Mm.
And then a few years ago, she was in the sequel to Sinister, which was not great.
She was in the Wayward Pines TV show as well.
Yeah.
So she works steadily, just nothing big.
No, and I thought from that she could have elevated her career massively, because she's brilliant.
Yeah, she is absolutely amazing. But you're just mentioning the sleazy professor there, played by Eric Stoltz. Yeah. He's amazing in this film as well. Such a dirtbag.
Yeah. I'm just going to have a little smoke. He's gross, isn't he? Yeah. He's disgusting.
But during the film, I think she's one of the characters that really goes through a real transition throughout the whole story. At the beginning, you know, before the whole business of the end of the world party. Mm-hmm. She is carefree, she's happy, she's smiley, but as the film goes on, when she sees the girl that slit her wrists in the bathroom to when she ultimately realises that Sean has betrayed her by sleeping with her roommate, she grows warier and older, almost like an old soul in a young mm-hmm. body. So by the end of the film, she's so bittered by all the wrongdoing that's been happening to her throughout the whole film. It's so unfair. She doesn't get a chance to be who she was when we first meet her. It's real sad.
Yeah, it's true. And you're right, she is the only one who grows. Because if you look at Sean, he's the same dick at the end of film that he was at the start mm-hmm. of the film.
Yeah. He's got that blood on his face and she's just like, you're so sad.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
And I really like Ian Somerhalder as well, or Boone from Lost, as he should always be known.
He's got the most sort of captivating eyes ever.
Yeah. I could just lose myself.
I would get lost in them.
He's a sickeningly handsome man, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's upsetting.
Chiseled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfection. I love that he just wants to fuck every guy from the start to the end. It's amazing. He just doesn't give a shit, does he?
He's so self-centred. I love the scene where Jay Baruchel's character has the drug overdose.
Tripping balls.
And they take him to hospital and everyone's going, he's dying. He's just there at back. No, he's fine. I can see him breathing. Don't worry about it. He doesn't give a shit.
I love Paul Williams as the doctor. He's just like, so you're dead now. We need to... It's like, no, I'm not dead.
I'm not dead. You haven't got a pulse. You're dead. I'm not. The character we have to talk about, though, my absolute favourite character in the film, Dick.
Yes.
He's only in, what, two scenes? Yeah. Or like one long scene, really. Yeah. The character of Dick, played by Russell Sams. He's Paul's drunken, foul-mouthed, crazy ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
And the dinner scene, where he's having dinner with Paul's mum and his own mum, and he's just acting up. He won't take his sunglasses off. He's drunk as a lord, smoking his cigarette. When his mum calls him Richard, not my name. My name is Dick.
What are you studying? Oral sex.
Yeah.
He's got his like foot in the crotch of his mate all the way through. But if you watch the two mothers at that scene, I was watching them, you see them kind of smirking and laughing. Yeah. And even though the focus is on them, you can see them they just can't take it seriously. I think that was improv.
Yeah.
And I think they were literally sitting there going, right, you just do whatever you want. And when it's going, Dick! You can just see them laughing. I was like, that's amazing.
Also lip syncing to George Michael to
that's
on a bed.
True, yeah.
Yes.
It's all of his line deliveries absolutely slay me. So when his mum asks him how college is going and he goes, it sucks cock.
So good. Again, what's he doing now?
I've never seen him in anything else.
No.
And it's a real shame. And I love the way he storms out as well. He's gets angry with his mum, he storms out, and then he walks past that table of people eating, he slams his hand on the table and goes, have a good one.
Fuck you. So good.
Oh, God.
He's amazing.
It's just one of those scenes that just, again, it didn't need to exist.
No.
It adds nothing to the story, but it's so goddamn brilliant.
It's absolutely awesome. Again, we should see him more.
Yeah.
Watch him now be announced in the next Marvel film next week after we talked about him.
More than likely.
Outstanding.
And the thing is, there's not really that much of a story.
No.
So, loosely, Sean, you know, keeps getting these love letters from someone who's obsessed with him. He thinks it's Lauren. It turns out it's not. It's this cafeteria girl who kills herself. Sean ends up, instead of waiting for Lauren, he sleeps with her roommate. Mm-hmm. Lauren's obsessed with Victor, but then when we finally meet Victor, it turns out he doesn't know who she is.
Yeah.
And that's really it. There's no plot than that. It's a collection of really cool, really interesting scenes and really good acting.
Isn't that like uni, though?
Yeah.
Like university and college days, because nobody really remembers the whole, like, from start to end week of what happened. Nobody really remembers the semesters, the lectures, the group work they did. They remember a collection of things that happened.
Yeah.
So stealing a traffic cone, being sick all over somebody's door, you know, those are the moments that people remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that film represents that.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it.
Losing your virginity and being spewed on.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it's all about. I don't think she had a choice in that.
Yeah. That scene was gross.
It's horrible.
Yes, that's a very,
really
very
awful.
Yeah.
And the suicide with the music.
Yeah. But you know what, really?
That was bleak.
Do you know what the real sad thing about her story was? Even when she passed away and her body got taken into the ambulance, Sean still didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
Isn't that heart-wrenching?
I love the rewind scene then. You keep seeing her.
Yeah.
Different scenes.
You see that she was there all the time in the background, and then it shows you a little montage of all those bits. That's
again,
great.
Rewatch factor.
Yeah.
You're then looking out for her at the bonfire, like crying at the party.
Yeah.
But what a horrible, horrible way to be remembered. She's never remembered by the person that she wanted to look at her. Mm-hmm. That gets me every time.
You know, her final message to Sean was her suicide note, but he didn't realise that's what it was. So
he thought it was a goodbye from life.
Yeah, as far as the world knows, she didn't leave a note.
Yeah.
Because he didn't realise that's what the damn thing was.
It's so sad.
He probably went home, played his acoustic guitar and had a wank.
Yeah.
That's the truth. That's how, I love that he doesn't care. Even when something bad happens, you hear his thoughts and he's like, I wonder what a pussy's like. That's his thought process all the time.
And on the end of the film, we think that maybe him riding off into the dark night on his motorcycle, he's going to find a little bit about himself. He's going to realise who he really wants to be. And when he's just about to say what he thinks, it cuts off, and then Erasure starts singing, "We'll be together again."
The soundtrack's awesome.
Done. Yeah, it is very, very
so,
good.
So, so good.
It's interesting that Bret Easton Ellis, there have been film versions of, I think, three or four of his books now, and this is the only one he likes. He didn't like the film version of Less Than Zero, which isn't great, and he didn't like the film version of American Psycho, which is amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah.
But he didn't really like it. But this one, he's a big fan of. He says it's the best version or the best replication of his work, because it's not even been that true to the book. Avery has changed quite a bit, but he's kept the feeling the same. He's kept the ethos the same, even if the minute details have changed, and Ellis loves it.
Have you read the book?
I have, years ago, yeah. I've got everything.
It makes me now want to... Yeah. Read it and see the
Me
differences.
Too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a good read.
So good.
Cool. Yeah.
We've enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not really much more we can say because we've, you know, we've bigged up the actors and our favourite scenes.
It's nice that we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Shall we score it?
Let's.
Gemma, I'm going to throw it to you first. What are you going to give it?
It's a film that I would only watch sort of once every few years, but when I watch it, I really engross myself into everything that makes up for it, the story, the acting, and most importantly, directing. So for that, I'm going to give it a very high 8 out of 10.
Mark?
You'll never see another film like it. You won't. Mm. For such brave choices, he deserves all the credit under the sun. So for me, it's a 9. I love it. It's so good.
Nice. I'm going to give it a 9 as well. I think it's an unheralded, unrated gem. Brilliantly, brilliantly directed, marvellously acted, superb. So that overall gives it a skip to the end, 9 out of 10.
Amazing.
Mm. Yay.
Right then, guys, it's my choice for the next rewatch.
Okay.
And as we established on the rewatch, we can pick amazing classics, we can pick some films that are dog shit, and Ben did this one to bring this film to more people's attention, I think. But I also like to use it as a chance to give films a second chance. We might like it, or we might have agreed with our original thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay.
So on the next episode, we'll be watching The World's End.
Oh!
It's game show time. It's time for round two of Flick Me Faster.
Yes.
Yay!
Yeah. Sounds good, doesn't it?
It does
when you say
sound
it.
Pretty good. So here's how the game works. It's a team game. Each week, two of us are playing together. That's what she said. And each member of the team gets 15 famous movie posters. You then have 3 minutes to try and describe those movie posters to your teammate, and they have to guess what the film is. Every time you get one right, you get a point. Then it swaps over. The other member of the team has another 15 and another 3 minutes to describe them to you in. Straightforward, yeah?
Yes.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. Couple of things to know, though. When you're describing it, you can only say what you see.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, who used to say that, Mark?
Roy Walker.
Correct.
He
Roy
remembered.
Walker.
Well done.
In Enter the Dragon.
So you can only say what you see. You cannot mention the actors' names, the characters' names. You can't say other things they've been in. You can't say, oh, you know I love this, it's my favourite film. Anything like that.
Yeah.
All you can do is describe the picture.
Yeah.
Very straightforward, a lot of fun. Last time round, myself and Gemma were the team.
We did.
Team Booch, was it?
Booch.
And we managed between us to get 26 out of
insane.
30 correct. Which,
insane.
Yeah, that is insane.
It's a good benchmark.
So Mark and Gemma are our team today.
Hey!
Who is it, Team Mema or Team Gark?
Gark sounds more threatening.
Gark's like,
Gark are playing download. They're not, but you know they are.
They should be.
Yeah,
they should
stop.
Be. Gark. So it's Team Gark today.
Yes.
Who would like to go first, Mark or Gemma?
Oh, shall I go first?
Ladies first.
Ladies first. Okay,
so
Gemma.
So Mark should go first.
So I'm going to pass to you my Apple iPad.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
And you have 15 pictures there.
Which way do I swipe?
You swipe to the left.
Okay.
Like on Tinder.
Yeah.
I don't know about Tinder.
And now Gemma has my Apple iPad in her hands. I'm also about to use the timing function on my Apple Watch. That's Apple.
Ben, they don't give away stuff we've tried this. Let's just start plugging other stuff.
Okay.
Thy Beats by Dr. Dre and my Rolex.
Always Rolex.
Rolex would be more reliable for timekeeping because the battery ain't going to go as quick.
That's true.
Well, Rolex. I've learned something today.
Okay, Gemma, you ready?
Ready.
Your 3 minutes start now.
First one, there's a young man and he's got his hands in his pockets and he's looking at a lady's leg who's pulling up a stocking. He looks kind of concerned, but he's interested. So the lady is pulling her stocking up on her naked
the
leg.
The graduate.
Well done.
Right, we've got five chaps. They're in suits and sunglasses and a black tie. They look like they're going to go somewhere.
Reservoir Dogs.
Yes.
Correct.
A man is throwing his hands in the air, covered in blood, and in an army suit. He's in a jungle, and there's some comrades behind him ready to do battle, but he's got his head thrown back.
Platoon.
Oh, he's killing it. He's killing it.
There's a child's finger in connection with a...
E.T.
Yes! Well done. I was going to say, he shit himself. But
can't
that's
say
cheating.
That. Cheating.
There is an ocean. There's a lady swimming at the top of the ocean, but there's a great big beast coming up from the rear.
Jaws!
Oh, there we go. A man is looking innocently and wondrously on a park bench with a suitcase and he's wearing
Forrest
a white
Gump.
Suit. Yes.
Killing it.
Terrible.
A dude has a black trench coat and he's got three bezzy mates in sunglasses and look equally as
the
dangerous.
The Matrix.
Yes.
Everyone right so far?
Yes. A man has got a hand on his chest, but is also holding a swastika. He's got a bit of a skinhead. He's got a bit of a goatee going on too, and he looks mean. He looks angry.
American History X.
Wow.
Nails it.
There is a Polaroid of a man looking towards the side, and in that is another Polaroid with a lady looking directly at a camera, quite angry.
Half your time's gone, by the way.
There's another Polaroid within a Polaroid.
Memento.
Yes.
Well done.
Black and white man holding a gun. He's got a clenched fist. He looks angry. Looks like he's about to do something quite big. Half of it's black, half of it's white.
What is?
The poster.
Half it's black, half it's white.
Pass.
We'll pass and come back.
Okay, right. A man is sleeping happily, but he's on a great big screen. And at the bottom of the screen, there's lots of people looking up at the screen in awe.
The Truman Show.
Yes.
Oh, well done.
There are a collection of faces, but together it looks like a bunny. Like a skull with big ears, but there's a collection
Donnie Darko.
Of faces.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
A lady with glasses. A lady with glasses looking directly at the camera. And in the glasses, there's like a gig going on.
Almost Famous.
Yes. A man's in a tube, but he's joined with a lot of people who don't look like they're alive. They look like they're undead. But he looks a little bit concerned. He wants to get off this tube.
We'll come back to that.
Pass?
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay. There's a poster. It looks like it's been shot, but instead of a person, there's an alien image.
20 seconds.
Oh, shit. Carry on.
Pass?
Yeah.
It's the last one.
Oh,
last
shit.
One.
Okay, keep going with that last
okay.
one.
Okay, so yeah, so it's a mean alien drawing, and it looks like, you know, in a place where they shoot the
yep.
target. So it's that, basically.
District
and in 9. A distance, yes.
He's got it.
Do you want to go back?
Yeah,
okay.
quick.
Right, this man, he's ginger. He looks very concerned, and there's a lot
time
of
up,
undead
people. Oh. Time up. There goes the alarm.
Do you know what it was?
Go on, then.
Shaun of
oh,
the Dead.
Oh, shit.
What,
shit,
Gemma,
indeed.
I don't think at any point you said zombies. That would have been the easiest yeah. word to use, I think.
I thought it was too
or
obvious.
He's got red on him.
Yeah. Here you go. And the other one, that black and white one?
Yep.
Scarface.
Oh, shit.
See?
Not clenched, too bad, though.
Clenched fist.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Very angry.
Tell you not what, though, dudes. You did a very did very well there. You got 13.
Oh, nice. Good work.
Excellent
not
stuff.
Not too bad.
Excellent stuff.
It's tough, isn't it, when you're in
it
the seat?
It is very tough, yeah. Okay,
God,
Mark, it's
damn.
Your turn to describe.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to set you up here.
I can't wait.
I don't know why. I feel like I'm going to be fucked over.
No, you're not. You're going to do great.
Trust me,
come
you're
on.
Not.
And it's
come
that
on.
Way.
Yeah. You own an iPad.
I know.
Yeah.
Think of the spirit of Gark. We
yeah,
can do this,
course.
Right?
Okay, Mark, are you ready?
Yes.
Your time starts now.
There's a big egg and green is coming from
Alien.
It.
Alien.
Yep. There's a guy who's got a gun against his head and he's got a red bandana. He's
oh, Deer Hunter.
Yep. There's a woman who's got a hand over her mouth and she's in shock. She's obviously about to be killed.
A scream.
There is a pumpkin with a dagger.
Halloween.
Killing it.
There's a line of people lined up, all about to be charged with something. There's five of them.
Usual Suspects.
Yep.
Amazing.
There's a woman's nipple and her hand is holding a rose over it.
American Beauty.
Correct. There's a guy holding some soap.
Fight Club.
Correct. There's someone running after someone else.
Catch Me If You Can.
Amazing.
There's a clock and there's a guy looking really obviously like, oh my God, what's going on? And a woman's watching over him. It's a clock that you'd want to hit because it's got these like ding, 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 ding. It's an old fashioned clock and the guy looks like he's trapped in time.
You can pass, remember?
Time Bandits?
No.
Pass.
Okay.
I don't know.
There's a robot looking lost. He's animated.
Wall-E.
Correct.
Well done.
There's a van that is a distinctive yellow and it's driving off.
Oh, Little Miss Sunshine.
Family van, yes.
Well done.
There's an old man holding a briefcase in black and white looking up to a window.
Falling down?
Nope. He's looking really scared and there's a light on him. It's really iconic. He's all in black. Oh my God.
Oh,
he looks
in black.
So scared.
You
no.
can pass, remember.
Pass.
Okay, we'll come back to that. There's a guy who's got a hat on with a moustache that's got two blades against a girl who's had her head shaved. So it's really, really...
V for Vendetta.
Correct.
Well done.
There's a guy, black and white, boxer, really beaten up.
Raging Bull.
Correct.
Oh, amazing.
There's a guy holding a bag. He's in front of a car, and he's got an amazing jacket with this scorpion on. He looks
Drive.
So cool. Yep. Right, we're going to go back to the one you
I'm not letting you go back to Groundhog Day because you said he looks like he's trapped in time, which he absolutely does
That's
not.
Fine.
That's
okay.
bullshit.
Let's get this last one over.
Okay, let's go.
There's a guy really harrowed. He's like knocking on the door of this house. He's hopefully there to help the situation. He looks really, really black and white. Really,
God,
really.
1 minute left. You've got a minute, though.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So he's black and white. Yeah. He's got a hat on. He's all in black, and the light from the window is onto him. It's a black and white photo, and it's so iconic, one of the most iconic films of
all time. This is to go in the lead, by the way. You're on 26 between you at the minute.
There's
this is to take the lead.
On. Right, and he's there, so he's obviously been called to the house to help. Okay. So he's got this briefcase in his hand, and he looks like he's got this iconic black hat on,
iconic
but he's all in
hat.
Black, and he's going to the house.
Yeah,
he's looking up at the window.
30 seconds.
God, I don't know.
It's really, really iconic in every single way.
Just keep saying iconic, that'll
just,
work.
Just think of someone, right,
okay.
in the street.
Yeah.
He's all in black. Yeah?
Yeah.
20 seconds.
And he's looking up at the window.
Okay.
And he's standing
the
there.
She's
oh
got
my
it!
God.
Yes! Yes!
Well done. Well done. So Gemma got 14.
Yes!
Oh my God!
Which means your final score to go into the lead is 27.
Yeah.
Well
yeah.
done, dude.
I thought I'd suck at that. That was good fun.
Oh my God, you were great.
I think I should deduct you a point for saying he looks like he's stuck in time or whatever it was.
Okay,
you said.
Yeah. No, we'll just wait. he looks like he's having the same day again and again. Amazing.
What's Bill Murray doing?
Yes.
Very well done, guys. So you go into the lead. Last week, Gemma and I scored 26. This week, Mark and Gemma, 27.
Yay. I want now me and you to go next week and clear up 30.
We could. The problem is, it's tough getting famous posters at this point. We've used 60.
Yeah.
I'll come up with some very fair ones as a games master. Don't you worry.
Amazing.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too.
Nice.
Lots of good shit out there. There's been so many new TV shows out and about on Netflix, Amazon Prime and so on.
Oh, why?
Lots of good music out there, lots of good books. So I'm intrigued. Marky Mark, what have you got?
I love that you said that there's been a lot of new TV shows, so I bought an album.
Ooh.
Hey!
Yay!
It's by a band called Pup.
Oh,
not Puppy.
Yes.
Pup.
Okay.
And they're a modern punk band and their new album's called Morbid Stuff, which only came out last week. They're a Canadian band. And it's really hard. I was trying, when I was writing some notes today, to think, who do they sound like? And it's always a good thing when you don't really know who they sound like. So at times I think they sound like Weezer. They are produced by the same guy that did the Weezer and the Mars Volta albums. So you're going to get a really high-produced, good quality sound. They're just really good, catchy choruses that you like from these punk bands. Each song's 2 to 3 minutes. You've got no 10-minute wanky over the top filler. It's just short, stabby, decent punk songs, which you don't get anymore. Like, we joke, but bands like Blink 182 and Weezer, they're not really doing great albums anymore. They're just releasing any old
what do you
shit
mean anymore.
Yeah, hang on, dude. Weezer's Blue album is a masterpiece.
I'm not talking about Weezer, I'm talking about Blink 182.
Yeah. What, you
sorry,
mean you don't like
in,
Dude Ranch?
We're suddenly in 2001.
The only punk band that I think is still doing it at a high level is the Bronx.
Yeah.
The Bronx put out fantastic albums every couple of years.
And Billy Talent, if you count them as punk. But
kind of.
But yeah. And Corey's side project.
Obviously.
They're really good. But my favourite tracks on the album is Free at Last and a song called Kids. I'm not going to be this person that comes on and says, I've listened to them since the start. I haven't. I think this is their third album. But I've gone back and listened to a couple of their earlier albums from 2016. They had 3 years off. And the whole album now focuses on the singer's depression and struggle. So it's not like, yay! But the songs are really uplifting, but the lyrics are very depressing, so I warn you. But give them a go. They're on Spotify, Apple Music. They've just toured the UK right now. But the album is one of those ones I've just had on in the car from start to finish, and it just feels like your time passes straight away. It's really good, energetic. There's none of this slow, melodic stuff. It's just boom, boom, boom. It's a really decent album. And for me, modern punk at its best. It's that good. Give it a go.
I have heard a lot of good things.
Yeah,
I'll certainly
really, really
out.
Good. Don't get them mistaken with Puppy.
No, because they're gash.
They're absolutely shite. It's Pup. But cool. Yeah, give them a go.
Will do. Gemma, what you got?
Yeah, so on the basis of, you know, there's a lot of TV and films out, I too have gone for an album.
Oh.
From 2010. So this is an old recommendation. It's by a producer called Wait What, and the album is called The Notorious XX. So fans of hip-hop, here's one for you. It's a mashup album taking the melodies of the Mercury Prize winning debut album of the XX and songs from the back catalogue of the Notorious B.I.G.
Ooh. How odd.
Mm-hmm. So Wait What is the alias of Charlie Kubel, who's a San Francisco music producer, and his forte is mashups. He's also performed with the likes of Wiz Khalifa, Taking Back Sunday and Motley Crue. So he's had a bit of a diverse background. But this album on paper seems very unlikely it's going to work. You know, the XX are kind of known for this moody and atmospheric kind of feel to their music, and Biggie's arguably one of the greatest rappers of all time.
No argument.
Exactly. And Biggie's talent was making lyrics capture exactly what his past was about and what his present was and what he wanted the future to be for him. And listening to the two together makes exquisite listening. The frailty of the melody that the XX portrays genuinely complements the raw emotion that Christopher Wallace brings to his rap. Personal favourites on the album include Suicidal Fantasy, which kind of makes you stop in its track, mm-hmm. with Biggie's dark musings and the ethereal minimalism that the XX brings. And it's all about the... I've got to try and pronounce this correctly now. It's all about the Crystallizabeths. Yes!
There we go.
It's... Gee, you try and say this on paper, it's hard. And it's a cool and funk-induced mood enhancer with P. Diddy, The Lox, and Lil' Kim sharing the mic for It's All About the Benjamins.
Yes.
Which is a banger. And I recommend this because you say the word mashup, and mashup kind of gets a bit of a bad vibe now, thanks to the likes of Glee. You know, it killed the genre completely. But for an album that you would not think would work at all, it really does. And align it with your ears ASAP.
There have been a few of these kind of unauthorized mashups of late. Wasn't the one that was like the Beatles and Jay-Z or something
that? Yeah, it was the Beatles and Danger Mouse, but using Danger Mouse produced it, but used Jay-Z songs. It was called the Grey Album. Mm-hmm. So it's like the White Album mashed up with the Black Album, fused together. That's a good listen. Helter Skelter, and I think it's 99 Problems, is a great fusion.
I even liked the split mashup album that Jay-Z did with Linkin Park.
Yes!
I thought there were some good songs on that, man.
Yeah. It's good, but this is a... I didn't even know this existed. Somebody from work recommended it, gave it a listen, and I was like, "Woo, this blows my tits off."
I remember originally when you got bands, was it like Too Many DJs?
Yeah.
Like really good concert albums where you had stuff like Nirvana meets Beyonce and all this, and it worked so, so well. I think they were one of the first to kind of get it out there on these exclusive ones.
Yeah.
And then everyone jumped on board, but it works so well. Mm-hmm. Really cool.
There was a Queens of the Stone Age one as well a couple of years ago. I can't remember. That was mashed up with a rapper, I think. I can't remember who it was. It was good.
Yeah.
I think the first mashup I ever listened to was The Strokes and Christina Aguilera. I think it was Genie in a Bottle and Hard to Explain.
Nice.
Good God.
It's good.
If you like mashups as well, on Angelic to the Core, the second half of the album,
yeah.
There's a lot on there that's not a mashup because you don't mix Corey with anything else.
Never,
but
never.
When you think of Corey and Snoop Dogg,
yes.
Imagine them two together.
Naturally.
You get it. Imagine him and Fred Durst.
Yeah.
They're there. Oh my God.
See, Corey, you know, you're talking about a mashup, and if you don't understand Corey and you don't understand the Truth Movement or any of his band, you would think that it was just someone who doesn't know how to record music. You would think it was just someone taking two disparate styles that don't work at all together because he's a fucking idiot. But it's not that.
Nope.
It's not that.
Never.
It's definitely not that.
No, and he is the new John Lennon,
clearly.
Well, that goes without saying. Like
his cover of Imagine.
I know. Not what?
Wasn't it?
He covered Imagine. No, John Lennon covered Corey.
John Lennon went back in time and then covered Corey. That's true. That is true.
But get it right, dude. You're not a Corey file if you can do stuff like that.
Sorry.
You'll be locked up. Right then. So Ben, an album?
Well, so as we've said, there's been a lot of good TV this time. So I've got an album.
Have you really? This is great. Yeah. I love it.
I've got the new album by Zeal and Ardor called Stranger Fruit. Now, Zeal and Ardor are the weirdest, most unique avant-garde metal band I've ever heard. So the band was created by a chap called Manuel Ganyu, who was born to an African-American mother and a white Swiss father. So because of his dual heritage, he grew up listening to music from all over the musical spectrum. And Zeal and Ardor is the culmination of his musical interests. It's essentially a mashup of American soul and blues with European black metal.
Oh,
Jesus.
And it really is as bizarre as that sounds. So the songs have verses that wouldn't sound out of place being sung by gospel choirs, and he's got a phenomenal, soulful, bluesy voice. But then they segue into choruses full of blast beats and howling riffs and black metal screams. Some of the songs come across like Tom Waits jamming with Cradle of Filth.
What the hell?
It's extraordinary. It shouldn't work, but it really does. So far, they've released three albums, the most recent of which was last year's Stranger Fruit. And if you go online and take a look at reviews for that album, all of the reviews are universally positive. Everyone banging on about how great this album is. And it's not just the metal press, mainstream press as well. Things like Pitchfork and all that kind of stuff rave about how great they are. It ended up on a lot of, you know, end of the year best of lists last year. If you want to get an idea of what they're all about, listen to the tracks Row Row, and Fire of Motion, and We Can't Be Found. Listen to those three first, see what you think. If you like it, then get involved in the album. There is some filler on the album. There's like three or four instrumental tracks. Get rid of them.
Yeah.
I don't want instrumental. Delete. Bullshit. Get rid of it. Just stick to the proper ones. But there's so much good material on there. And because they're so unique and avant-garde, you know, sometimes you'll hear a band and it'll make your jaw drop because you've never heard anything like it before. When I first heard Zeelandado, I only got into them literally like a fortnight ago.
Yeah.
But it was like the first time I heard Dillinger Escape Plan. Bloody I was like, hell. Holy shit, my doors of perception just blew wide open to this world I didn't know existed. It's brilliant, exhilarating stuff. Annoyingly, they played Download last year.
Aww.
They were on just before Baroness in the tent. But because we didn't know who they were, we didn't go and see them. They're currently on tour in the US with Baroness. So I'm hoping that when Baroness come over here later this year to tour their new album, they'll bring Zeelandado with them.
Cool.
Because they're absolutely fantastic.
It's a shame they're not playing this year's Download.
Yes, I know.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
Nuts. Never mind.
Yeah, you've
it's
had
not
a lot
meant
of,
to be.
A lot of good music from us this week. We don't bring music
weird?
That often, actually.
When I was at home, I thought, I'm going to take an album to be different.
Yeah,
I haven't done it for ages.
Yeah.
Look
I thought,
at us.
There's no way anybody is going to come up with an album.
Synergy.
Yeah.
Three-way music.
And it's very different. You've got punk, you've got hip-hop, you've got metal-y, blues, gospel type
which
stuff.
Is angelic to the core. You get all those genres.
Yeah. Well, so forget the three picks we've given you. Just go and listen to Ascension Millennium.
Yes. That's my jam.
Arguably the greatest record ever made.
Or former child actor. As an EP,
that is pretty
the
good.
Artwork doesn't look like some crap on Mario Paint.
Definitely not.
It doesn't. It looks great.
If you want to go old school, What's Wrong with the Youth? You know, take it back to time.
Why not? That is what it's all about. Former child. Fuck all our recommendations. Yeah. Angelic to the core. Funkadelic. Rockadelic. That's all you need. Honestly, done. Right, I don't care about social media unless they've got Corey.
They've all got Corey, you're fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, but I managed to find a few who did.
Yeah.
So on Twitter, Ben Mullings, at Mullings Ben, has said, finally got to Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Yes!
Truly amazing TV that nobody talks about. Shame it only had one season. How great is Dark Place, Gemma?
It's perfection.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually recommended this to somebody I work with, and I'm giving them the DVD on Wednesday. It's great. You've got Alice Lowe, you've got Matt Berry, you've got Richard Ayoade.
Matthew Holness as well as the main character. It's absolutely amazing. And did you ever watch Man to Man with Dean Lerner?
Yes, I did.
So that was when Richard Ayoade took his character from Dark Place and did a chat show. It's basically like Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge.
Amazing.
But with Dean Lerner in the place of
Partridge. Oh, nice.
It's absolutely brilliant.
I love how shonky the whole sets are, the stories. Like, it's unintentionally bad, but it's just it's comedy gold. Comedy gold.
Get involved.
Nice.
Get involved. On Facebook, Simon Williams has said he's discovered a new band, 485C. They sound very Strokes-like, which is a sound I'm happy to hear again, he says.
Oh, nice.
Not familiar?
My ears have pricked.
Yeah.
I'm interested. My ears, guys.
Oh, sorry.
Not my penis.
What?
All right, Gemma.
You've got a penis?
No.
Bloody hell, your mother's got a penis. Remember them?
Goldie-looking
chain. Yeah.
Bloody hell, what happened to them?
I saw them live in Birmingham years ago.
I saw them at V Festival.
Nice.
Good Lord. Tamlizan O'Driscoll on Twitter, at Tamlizan, has said Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix. Timothy Oliphant, Drew Barrymore and Jonathan Slavin are great. They are great.
They're brilliant.
Season 3 is hilarious.
I've only seen season 1.
Yeah.
Oh, get on
it. I didn't realise. I can't believe how quick it seems that they just bring out a new season.
Yeah.
And Timothy Oliphant is fine.
He's a tremendously handsome fellow, an incredibly funny one as well.
Yeah.
It's one of the few comedy shows that genuinely makes me laugh, laugh out loud, belly laughing.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant show.
And great chemistry too.
Yeah, big time. On Facebook, Thomas Simpson has said, reading The Psychopath Test by John Ronson, it's great. Have any of you read anything by John Ronson?
No.
I don't read, you know this.
This is true.
I've heard
about
this.
You've brought a load of books of late, unless you were just lying.
I buy them, but I don't read them.
Weren't they picture books?
Yeah, that's true.
They make good stands.
So John Ronson is my absolute favourite non-fiction writer. He's an investigative journalist. He's kind of like Louis Theroux, but without the faux naive bullshit that Louis Theroux does. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, what, like, I was suddenly uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Theroux. He's a genuine journalist, John Ronson. And the book, The Psychopath Test, goes into the kind of mental health history and like the DSM-4 and all these kind of things that diagnose people with various illnesses and stuff. It's a fantastic, brilliant read. He's also written a couple of great books called Them, Adventures with Extremists and Lost at Sea. Go and get anything you can by John Ronson. He is the best non-fiction writer for me.
That sounds really cool.
Absolutely amazing. On Twitter, Matthew Schoaf, at Matty the Ghost, has said the Phoenix Wright trilogy for the PS4. Have any of you ever played any of the Phoenix Wright games?
No.
If it's not 16-bit, I don't care. Well, honestly, or 8-bit.
It pretty much is, because the Phoenix Wright games first came out for the DS. They're called Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney.
Right.
And they're called, like, visual novel games.
Oh, wait, yes, on the DS?
Yeah.
I freaking love those game.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. They win. So you play this lawyer, Phoenix Wright, and what you take on clients who've been accused of murder. You have to then go and it's like a point and click thing where you go and investigate the crime.
Wow.
You have to examine the evidence.
And then they object.
And then they object. You go into court and then you have to defend them in court. And
nice.
They're brilliant. And they've put the first three of them together. And as Matthew said, for the PS4, but they're also out on the Switch. So I'm going to be getting those very soon because I love them on the DS.
They were brilliant. And they would go on for days and days and days. This wasn't just like a short game.
Is it a bit like Champ Manager, but in court?
No.
No, not at all.
I just thinking of a game that plays for ages and you get to go along the story mode.
You also have to find evidence. And it's really hard to find the evidence as the game goes on. And the characters are actually a lot more sinister.
Yeah.
They're really frightening.
They're great, though, those games. So I'm definitely going to get that for the Switch.
Sorry, ball just dropped.
On Facebook, Connor Matthew has said, Hotel Artemis with Dave Bautista, Jodie Foster and Jeff Goldblum. Checked it out and was impressed. Have you guys seen Hotel Artemis?
No, I want it.
Yes.
I really loved it.
Is it good?
It's fantastic. Apparently it's in the same universe as John Wick.
Yeah, it looks very much like... I don't think it's in the same universe.
It
just has kind of ripped off John Wick
a little bit.
But it's a very good film, massively underrated. It didn't get great reviews, didn't do well at the cinema, but worth a watch. I really enjoyed it.
Check it out.
Jodie Foster is excellent.
She is, as is Batista, because he always is. Unless he's tripping into the ring at WrestleMania.
Bastard. Or getting a sort of a chain around his neck and helping. Mm. I did see that bit.
It was not good.
Oh, dear.
That match should never have gone 35 minutes.
It was the
longest match on the card.
It's Trips. He's put himself over.
Always. Two men with a combined age of 100.
That's mad.
Ridiculous.
Absolute ridiculous.
Anyway, Wes Pringle on Twitter, @WesPringle, has said, just finished season 2 of The OA on Netflix. What a trippy show. Fucking bonkers, but in a great way. Can't wait for season 3. Gemma, you've seen The OA, haven't you?
I've seen the first season, but I've not seen the second season. However, after discussing this with my other half, he says the end of season 2 is very meta.
Okay.
Very meta.
Have you ever seen it, Mark?
Nope.
I gave up after like 2 episodes of season 1. It was too fucking weird for me.
I've heard a lot of good things about season 2, though. Yeah. It's also got Phyllis from The Office.
It has, yes.
Oh.
I may give it another chance then, just for Phyllis. Mark Hatcliffe on Facebook agrees with you, Mark. He said the latest album by Pup, Morbid Stuff. Their first 2 albums are killer as well.
There you go. Nice.
On Twitter, James Gain, @James Gain, has said, got to give a shout out to season 2 of The Tick on Amazon Prime. Even more brilliance from the god among mortals that is Peter Serafinowicz.
He is a legend.
Mm-hmm. And that show is great. Have you seen The Tick on Amazon?
Nope.
Only the first season.
Get involved in season 2. It's better than the first season.
Ooh.
I loved it.
Sign me up.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, just to bring up wrestling again, Ben, aka Suavis91 on Instagram, has said, I'd like to recommend that bit of fan footage where Dash Wilder got hold of that dickhead who tackled Bret Hart and knocked him the fuck out.
Yes!
Now, if anyone out there is not familiar with this, what happened was, it was WrestleMania last weekend, and part of WrestleMania week, they always have the Hall of Fame ceremony where people are inducted into the Hall of Fame. Mark and I, when we went to Mania six years ago...
We went to the
Hall of Fame ceremony, we saw Mick Foley inducted, we saw Donald Trump, of all people, inducted. Yeah, exactly.
Arnie.
So this year it was Bret Hart, as part of the Hart Foundation, was being inducted. And as he's giving his speech, some dipshit arsehole fan, not even a fan, I don't know why I'm calling that, he decided to jump on the stage and tackle Bret. Now, Bret is a cancer survivor, a stroke survivor. He's in his 60s. He's, you know, quite a frail dude. It was an absolute prick move. But the guy who did it, what he didn't think was, oh, yeah, Bret is surrounded by several hundred double-R bastards.
Yeah.
And all the wrestlers plowed onto the stage and beat the living shit out of this guy.
Yeah.
And as they were carting him out, you see Dash Wilder just popping with a beautiful right hook and puts his ass on the ground. Amazing.
And he just carries on walking as if he's just walking just to get a new suit or something. He's just strolling. La, 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 la.
Yeah.
It's the right answer in that situation.
I hope that guy's got brain damage.
Yeah, well, I mean, violence is very rarely the right answer, but in that instance, he deserved a fucking
ass whooping.
He's an absolute
wanker.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolute twat.
He's been let out now and he's just got banned from all WWE events. That's it.
Yeah.
Wanker. Good.
He'll do some prison time for that, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Nobber.
But WrestleMania was good.
WrestleMania was pretty good. It was a solid card. There was
there
was nothing amazing, but there was nothing terrible. It was just a nice, solid card.
Yeah, I had fun. Yeah. Kofi Mania.
Kofi Mania all the way, mate. That was amazing.
But the ending was a bit...
Becky winning is what everyone wanted. It would have been better if Ronda knew how to keep her fucking shoulders down and hadn't botched the ending.
Yeah.
But what do you expect? She's only been doing it for 2 minutes. She can't always get it right.
No.
But yeah, I enjoyed WrestleMania.
It was all right.
Yeah. The takeover event was phenomenal as well.
Absolutely amazing.
Always is.
Pete Dunne is the best in the world.
Pete Dunne. Now, by the time this episode comes out, it will have already happened. But I think tomorrow on Raw, when they do the Superstar Shake-Up, I think Pete Dunne's going to show up. What do you reckon, Mark?
I reckon SmackDown.
Yeah.
We'll find out on the next episode, which has already happened.
There we go.
So, yeah, lots of good stuff there. So please do keep all of your recommendations coming in. You can get us on Twitter @SDTEPodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram @skiptotheendpodcast, or email us podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. We've talked about Hitler, we've talked about paedophiles. What more do you want?
We've also said that this episode is quite iconic.
It's been very iconic,
very
hasn't it,
iconic.
Mark?
It has been very, very iconic.
How
from
iconic?
Start to finish. You know, you get it all, don't you, here? You get it all.
Yeah. Everything.
And as you heard on the next episode, we'll be starting our new bingo, which is Sex Pest Bingo.
Good
so
Lord.
That'll be a good one. Well. Get those dabbers at the ready, oh. You know what I mean? Prizes to be won.
Form an orderly queue.
Prizes to be won. Pedo bingo. Doesn't quite ring, but
they should bring Pedo Bingo to CITV.
Yeah, with Pat Sharp as a host. Not that he's a pedo, but as no. in he's just fun and, you know, funhouse.
What's on the next episode? Quick.
What's that small, tiny film we're going to review on the next episode?
Oh, I don't know. What's it called now? Avengers or something?
Avengers. Oh, like Seth Rogen.
Avengers Endgame.
Endgame.
Oh,
that's it.
That cool. One.
It's going to be amazing. It's the culmination of, what, 21 other films? Yep. 11 years of
Minimum.
The MCU. Pretty big.
It's going to be insane.
It's going to be delightful. Gemma, what's our topic?
Well, we're going to be talking about our top three Asian films. So any country that is on the Asian continent, we will be talking about them. And we want you to tell us what your top threes are.
So you say any country, but really when you say Asia, you're talking about Japan, Korea, China.
Yes.
But if you want to bring any Bollywood movies, well, you're right, that's absolutely fine. I've never seen any, but bring them.
But I'm very excited about this one because I think on and off air, we've talked about a lot of Japanese and Korean films that we've liked. So let's dedicate a segment to those types of
Sponsored
films.
Sponsored by CD Wow. The whole section. Yeah. Region free. Amazing.
There we go.
So good. There's a lot to choose from.
There is.
It'll be very good.
I'm
Mark,
excited.
Yeah, what's our next rewatch?
It is The World's End.
Ooh.
See, this is good because you and I know, have always kind of ragged on this film, especially Mark. And
I think I've only seen it once, which is unfair for me to be like, twice.
You've seen it twice because we saw it drunkenly at Benny's house.
I wasn't
that long ago.
Yeah.
But we need to give it a proper critical reappraisal,
yes.
I think. Yeah,
I like it. Skip to the End, review The World's End and Endgame. It's like a synergy.
Synergy.
See what you did.
And we'll call it a day and it'll be our end. We'll quit. We'll call it end the podcast.
That is not a promise. Yeah. Gemma,
promise.
Who are we masturbating over?
Well, funnily enough, it's going to link in perfectly because we'll be masturbating to the Farrelly brothers.
Oh.
See, that's a bit of fun. I don't
nice bit of fluff.
I don't think we've had a kind of light and fluffy one since Kevin Smith.
No.
We've done a lot of serious, real direct, you know, people who know how to direct films we've had since Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
I think on the basis of such a big review, I think this is going to be much needed.
What did you think, Ben, to this week of the announcement of the new Jay and Silent Bob film, whose casting includes Chris Hemsworth?
Do you know what I thought, Mark? Nothing. I have no opinion at all. I couldn't possibly care less.
You don't think it's great that
don't give a shit.
Next.
Okay, cool. And we're going to give away some amazing prizes.
Always. Prizes to be won.
Yes.
A whole lot of fun. It's a real wacky show where anything goes.
We will also be doing the final round of Flick Me Faster. Now, this is going to be tough. I didn't think Gemma and I, with 26 points, were going to get beat, but Gemma and Mark have only gone and got 27.
Yeah.
So, Mark, I think you're sitting pretty at the minute, pal. You're going to win it one way or the other, so you're good.
Yeah.
But I want that belt. I want that belt. For
okay,
fuck's
you
sake.
Have
I,
to share it, though.
I, yeah, that's fine.
For the photo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Only for the photo. It's staying at my house. But I want that belt, so we've got to pull it together.
I will.
See, he could sandbag me. He could pretend that he doesn't know and he's going to win anyway.
But, I mean, that's the power of Team Barky Bark. You guys have come up trumps before.
This is true.
Oh, did I say fucking trumps? Sorry about that.
Ugh.
Come up tops. Tops.
So lots of good stuff, isn't there? Yeah.
It's going to be a massive one.
It's going to be a massive one. See you in 2 weeks.